This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This episode is episode 276, and we are discussing our From the Outside In topic, which will be our historical period piece movie battle royale. We've also got the latest in movie and TV news, spoiler-free reviews of Baby Driver and 12 Feet Deep. Be sure to get The Hoe on the Go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, where reviews are very much appreciated, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. Please share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you can follow us. At BuyPopcorn is our Twitter handle. You can also find us on Reddit, whatever you prefer there. You can also support the podcast at patreon.com/The Hollywood Outsider, where some tiers will get you a bonus episode of the show. My name is Scott Clark, and I'm joined by my fellow hoes, John Davenport. John, how you doing?
Hey, man? Scotty, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. I feel like I haven't, I've been gone for like 2-3 weeks, man.
I've only been gone for like a week. I kind of feel you though. I mean, it's been crazy. I don't know what to do without the podcast, really.
Yeah, I'm gone for like 2 weeks, and you bring on another gamer and you let him pimp his gaming website. So I'm not sure what that's about, but
we did that.
Yeah.
Who was that?
You had Zach on, and
he's a gamer too.
Yeah, he's got a game.
I didn't listen to the last episode because I wasn't in it.
Ah, that's why.
Well, we're in the lead. We got somebody with us that's an old favorite to the hose.
We do have it. Unfortunately, Aaron's not able to join us today. He's got a family emergency to take care of, but we do have a returning guest to the show. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back Scotch Calgaro. Scotch, how you doing?
What's up, guys? I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Thanks for being here. You're all prepped and ready to go for our battle royale?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Always.
Are you sure?
I'm up for a good battle anytime, you know that.
But you've done one of these before, right?
Yeah, I did the war movies.
The war movies one, yeah. Okay, yeah,
that's
a good one. You lost. Yeah. Well, I usually lose all of these, so don't feel too bad.
Okay.
My movies always get. I don't know if I've actually won one. Have I won one, John? Do you remember?
I don't actually keep score.
I don't either. Oh well.
By the way, for anybody who's keeping track, it took less than a minute for us to talk to video games without Aaron here to keep Scotty under control.
Hey,
no, we didn't get into specifics, so it's still fair play.
I just got to defend my turf, man. That's all I got to do. You know, come on here talking about some other gaming podcast that he shouldn't recommend, but yeah,
can't have that. Never.
I was shouting at my radio. That's all I'll say when I was out in LA listening to that. So,
hey, what were you doing out in LA?
I was out there for an expo called Electronic Entertainment Expo. It's called E3.
And that's cute.
Yeah. It was a big deal in my world. A lot of our listeners probably haven't heard of that, but got to go with a media pass. So it was a very, very big deal for me, and got to do some interviews and meet a lot of really cool people and try to expand my podcast over there too. So it was a good time. But we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah, we'll talk much later about that. Your podcast.
Yes. Sure. That's not the only reason I'm here, to pimp my own podcast. We actually have movie and TV things to talk about. So, okay. And speaking of TV, did you guys hear about this thing for Shark Week that they're doing, where Michael Phelps is going to be literally racing a shark on Shark Week?
So can we say that Olympic athletes have jumped the shark now?
Oh, man. I didn't even think about that.
That was the last episode I was on, was our Jump the Shark episode. So that was like the first place my brain went to, is that Michael Phelps is now literally jumping
the shark. So that means it's the end of Michael Phelps' career?
I doubt it.
Well, as long as he doesn't jump out of the water over the shark.
That's true.
Then he should be okay, right?
He's also part fish, I think. So I don't think his career is going anywhere anytime soon.
That's true. I thought you were insinuating that sharks were fish, because they're not. But
really?
Sharks aren't fish, are they?
Yeah. Yes, they are.
They are?
Whales aren't fish.
Whales are mammals.
Way to go, teach. You
know, speaking of which, this reminds me of how Shark Week went a few years ago. There was a Shark Week After Dark episode when they were doing Shark Week with Tara Reid and Ian Ziering because of
Sharknado.
And Tara Reid was like, well, I didn't want to sound stupid, so I went and looked up some stuff about sharks, and I thought I found something called a whale shark, so that must mean a whale and a shark had sex, and they made a whale shark.
Oh, that's Tara Reid for you.
Yeah.
That's Tara Reid. Enough said.
You're making me weep for humanity, John.
Yeah.
Just so absolutely. You know.
Here's my question. How's this going to work, though? Because how do you get a shark to – do they train sharks like to be able to just go in a straight line without wavering, or they put them in a tube?
I don't know.
We
could ask Fonzie if Henry Winkler wasn't dead, because they got them to sit still for him to jump over him on water skis.
That's true.
Wait, is Henry Winkler dead?
Isn't he?
I didn't think he was dead either.
No, he's alive.
Disregard. Sorry, Henry. Reports of Henry Winkler's death are greatly exaggerated. I apologize.
That was news to me as well, but I think it's a good promo. I mean, everybody's talking about it, but people always talk about Shark Week, so I feel like it's not.
Why is that, by the way?
I don't know.
People are fascinated by sharks. They are. It's crazy.
My sister-in-law, if she could, would take vacation off of the week of Shark Week. She's obsessed with sharks.
I don't get that. I mean, they're cool. They're cool fish.
I don't want to watch them. Fish. Just nonstop, nothing but sharks for 24 hours.
Nope.
So.
Not my thing.
Well, the thing that's crazy is, yes, there is some cool stuff about Shark Week that they put out. And they put out some, like, real stuff. But the thing that's aggravating is that they always find, like, the most least common denominator of a stupid story and just completely fake it. So a couple years ago, they did the mega mouth shark that they found somewhere. And a couple years after that, it wasn't even, like, they found a prehistoric shark at one point. Crazy.
Well, they do like these docudramas. Have you seen those? They did one for like the Megalodon shark, which is extinct. Everybody knows it's extinct, but it's 70 feet long. So let's do a docudrama about finding one down in some ocean trench somewhere. That's total BS, but we'll run it like a documentary. Have you seen those?
Yeah, exactly.
It's horrible. And people buy it. You know, people believe get online after exists. That and they totally believe that it's true.
Yeah. Kind of sad. Well, people will believe anything just because they want it to be want it to exist. So
they're gullible.
All right, let's go ahead and get into the movie and TV news. The Conjuring is getting another spinoff, and they're calling it The Conjuring Universe. You guys think we're getting a little bit carried away with this whole universe thing? Because I don't know. Using the term universe just sounds like they're cashing in on the Conjuring name. Almost like they don't have faith that the story will stand on its own merit. They've got to put the Conjuring name in there somehow. Do you get that impression, or is that just me?
I think they're really just overdoing this universe thing. Think about it this way. Do you call James Bond movies their James Bond universe?
No, but it also doesn't have recurring characters that keep coming back and intermingling, except for like the core, you know, like James Bond and Moneypenny and M and Q. Those are just like core characters.
Oh no, well, they bring up Blomfeld a few times. I mean, some of the characters do come back. Like Spectre is not a new thing. It's always been throughout it. So another example is it the Harry Potter universe, or is it just the world of Harry Potter?
Well, I would say once they introduced Fantastic Beasts, I would consider it the Harry Potter universe. But up until then, it was just the Harry Potter series. Would you agree?
Yeah,
I agree with Scott. Yeah, I agree with that. That once they brought a whole new set of characters into the same universe, then that's when you start using that term, I guess.
Yeah, it feels to me like we got to attach this to The Conjuring somehow. I mean, I understand that these characters are from that series and they're banking on people's reception to that movie being the reason that they're going to go see this one because they're expecting more Conjuring.
Well, isn't the studio getting sued over the last one because they did some copyright thing on the guy who actually owns the like Warren's wrote the life book? Story?
Yeah. That's a good point.
That's actually still happening. And that's what's even more interesting about this whole thing, because the Warrens, number one, who have been proved over and over again to be complete frauds, and why are they continuing to do this? But the other side is, yeah, somebody else owns the rights to all these stories. So is this something completely new that they made up for this movie, or is it just something that is part of their lexicon?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's... There's so many different moving parts, and like Scott said, gotta call you Scotch.
There we go.
Like Scotch said, you know, all that legal stuff going on, this just seems like, why take a chance with it? Just make it its own movie, right?
Is this series really popular enough to do this anyway? I mean, I know they've done okay, yeah. But the movies are good. They're not great.
I really like the first one a lot.
The first one was awesome, but they've kind of gone down a little bit since then.
Well, and they had a spinoff with what, Annabelle? Was that just based on the doll itself? Yeah. I didn't even see that one.
I really liked the first one. And the second one was disappointing to me, but it was also disappointing on my own end because I started like reading into a lot of what the Warrens did, and I got just really upset at the idea of how they bilked people out of money and whatever, and just to try to get famous off of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. People love their scary movies, though, man, and I think that's what they're banking on. they're just kind of going off of the success of the first one and how popular it was and trying to make it better. We're going to talk about that in a little bit with that, you know, rehashing movies and all that. But before we get to that though, let's talk about the X-Men franchise. Cause who doesn't love the X-Men franchise? Johnny, you raised your hand.
I don't.
I know you don't.
I love it. Johnny, you're wrong.
I'm somewhere in the middle. Because I love I love First Class. And the other ones just seem to get progressively worse and worse. I don't hate them as much as John does, but there is going to be another one. And this time, Jessica Chastain is going to be one of the villains. You guys think that she can save the franchise? And also, are you guys shocked that Jennifer Lawrence and Michael Fassbender signed on for another one?
I just want to know who the hell they owe money to bring them back to this thing. Because they should have learned their lesson by now. And I was kind of okay with the idea because Bryan Singer is out of it, but the guy who is going to be writing and directing it wrote such awesome gems like Triple X, State of the Union, Jumper, X-Men Days of Future Past. Oh, here's a good one. This is going to really tie it all together. Fantastic Four.
Oh,
ouch.
X-Men Apocalypse. I mean, come on. How can you trust this guy to make more X-Men movies when he's not really done writing some of the other stuff that he's done?
That's fair. I'm still hopeful, John. I know you really didn't like the last two. I didn't hate them. I enjoyed them, but they're not ones that I'm just rushing to rewatch by any means. I think the idea of Jessica Chastain as a villain is intriguing because to me, everything that she plays in is... I'm not going to say she's a sweet character, but she's just kind of, she's strong, but quiet at the same time. And always has this like sweetness about her. Seeing her as a villain sounds intriguing. Do you agree?
No.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, I understand what you're saying and I buy what you're saying. I'm totally on your side for what you're saying. But screw this crap, man. Why are we doing the Phoenix story again? They already did it once. Why are we going to do it again? Oh, because this time we're going to do it right? Come on, man.
Well, they're doing it with Batman, aren't they?
That's a different story. There. You shut up.
Don't go there. My thought on this is that Logan was a perfect exclamation point to end this entire franchise. Why they are still going on after literally the perfect ending, I have no idea. I love the X-Men movies. I this is not me saying I wish there weren't any more X-Men movies because I love really all of them. But Logan was the perfect place to end it. It was so well done and such a great story. Just call it a day.
I didn't consider that. That's actually a really good idea. Yeah, I kind of like that. As much as I like the X-Men, I would be perfectly fine if they just ended it with Logan.
Well, the problem with movie universes is they run great for a really long time and then nobody knows how to end it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Logan was the perfect ending to the X-Men franchise.
Quit while you're ahead.
Exactly. Go out on top. And mm-hmm. If they make another one, I doubt I'll go see it.
What honestly. About Jennifer Lawrence and Michael Fassbender? Because I'm shocked that Jennifer Lawrence is coming back because she felt like she was just kind of dialing it in on that last one. But Michael Fassbender, I think, is still having fun with it. I think he still likes the character.
Yeah, and I think Jennifer Lawrence likes the character too. I think she just needs to get more excited about doing it. Because I've never heard her go on like an interview or something and say, yeah, I really wish I hadn't done that, or I'm not really cool about doing this again. She seems to enjoy it when she talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, her performances seem kind of wooden.
I'm telling you, she owes money to somebody. They both do. They have to. They can't. They couldn't have been a part of that last movie and been like, "Hey, you know what? That was kind of fun. Let's do it again." No, they know what they did. They can smell it.
You are not a fan of this, are you?
No, I am not. Can you tell? I mean, I was trying to tone it down a little bit.
It's not really obvious, but if you listen close, you can pick up on the fact that you're not an X-Men fan.
That's the problem. I am a fan of the X-Men as an idea and as a comic. I liked it. I like it all. And I'm not the kind of person that says that they have to do an X-Men movie like the comics or anything else like that. I'm not that kind of person. I understand the movie universes are different than comics and books and all that other jazz. What I am, though, is a fan of quality. And we haven't gotten any from the X-Men. And, oh, I don't know, with the exception of Logan and Deadpool and maybe one or two X-Men movies, the vast majority of them have been crap.
Yeah. I think X2 was probably the best of them all. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. I liked First Class.
So, and this whole story is pretty much them saying, you know what, let's just retool. I mean, this is all supposed to be, and that, here's the other thing. You can't even trust the timeline you're working with, because it's all supposed to be an intermingled universe, but they've moved things here. They put stuff there. They said, okay, well, forget about time travel. And, oh, no, now we have time travel. What's going to make this happen?
God damn it, I hate these people.
Tell us how you really feel, John.
Oh, we should have talked about this a long time ago. This is fun. Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and move on before John has an aneurysm.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's getting serious in here. last thing I want to mention is Forbes published an article last week about summer blockbusters, and specifically why so many are opening weekly and why critics driving films and why critics are driving films more than they have the last couple of years. You guys think they're onto something after reading that article?
Yep, I do. There are a couple of references in that article that don't just include the critics. That's a big part of it. Rotten Tomatoes is a big part of it. It's what the article mentioned as kind of the beginning of the perfect storm that's going to sink theater blockbusters in general. And they do have a point. And I'll get to the Rotten Tomatoes in a minute. But one of the biggest things they talk about in that article, original content on TV and A-list actors doing TV shows is kind of killing the theater experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was it? The Sherlock team, Cumberbatch and crew are going to redo, or they're going to do a Dracula series.
Moffat and, Stephen Moffat and anyhow, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know you're talking about. That sounds awesome to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can stay home and watch that, you know, for the cost of your cable, the idea of spending a lot of money to go do a night out at the theater starts to lose its appeal.
Well, not only that, but I feel like there's so many options out there for people that are high quality outside of the theater.
Yeah.
And I know Aaron's not here to defend his whole I love the theater experience thing, which I do too. And we obviously want to encourage that. But at the same time, there are a lot of people out there that don't go to the movies for the same reasons that hardcore cinephiles do like us. You know, that they're going there to pick apart the movie and talk about it and have these discussions. They're going to the movie theater just for sheer entertainment purpose, like something to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or I really want to see this movie because I it's a sequel to something I liked. You know, they're not looking at it with a critical eye. They're just doing it for entertainment. And when you have so many other options that are providing entertainment that is at that same level of quality, whether it be TV shows, whether it be not network TV shows, but like the premium channel TV shows, things that are on Netflix. Netflix has got these Netflix original series that are high quality.
Yep.
There's streaming options. There are, you know, high def ways to download movies. Obviously, you're not going to get them right away, but there's so many options for people to provide their entertainment without having to go to the theater where they've got to pay a high ticket price and they've got to pay, you know, for popcorn and all this stuff that's very, very expensive. Not knocking that experience because I think it's important and it really is a good experience, but there's so many other things for people to do that it's becoming a second thought instead of the first thing to think of.
Well, the article talks about a perfect storm of things that are coming together to sink the theater experience.
Oh, yeah, that's just one thing.
That's just one. The Rotten Tomatoes critics is another one.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to read a movie review when I was younger, you had to read a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Or you had to watch, you know, At the Movies with Siskel and Ebert. I mean, those were the only places where you could get movie reviews.
Mm-hmm.
You either took the time to read the paper or you watched At the Movies once a week. It's everywhere now. You can go on Rotten Tomatoes and get 1,000 reviews for one movie.
Right.
You know, it's not that critics have gotten more critical of movies. It's just that their voices have gotten louder.
That's true, but you also have the score factor, because if you're not familiar with how Rotten Tomatoes works, they basically take an aggregate of either it's a fresh movie or a rotten movie.
Yep.
And that's determined by the reviewer. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
When you submitted that you actually say if it's fresh or rotten. I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the math behind that too, it's really fascinating because in order for a movie to be considered fresh, it has to be
6 out of 10.
6 out of 10, basically.
Yep.
So in theory, you could have two movies that score nothing but 6 out of 10s and nothing but 5 out of 10s on the other, and they're very similar in quote unquote quality, but one's going to be fresh and one's going to be rotten.
One's going to be 100% fresh and the other one's going to be 100% rotten.
Exactly.
Crazy.
Right.
They've tried to get around that by putting the aggregate, what do they call it? The viewer score or the audience score.
You have the critics, and then you have the
audience.
Is it audience?
Yeah, the audience score is different. And I was going through and looking at some of the ones we're doing later for the Battle Royale, and the audience score is always higher.
Always.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Well, it's almost in any movie, the audience score is higher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not looking at it as much of a critical eye, I feel.
Right. And to me, that would be more important. What does the average movie viewer think? Not what does somebody who's paid to nitpick apart movies think?
Well, but either way, whether you're looking at the audience one or looking at the critic one, you're still just looking at at a number. That's all you're looking at. And we've become almost trained to do that. Everybody knows what Rotten Tomatoes is. And when you open up your app to look to see what movies they are, like you talked about earlier, back in the day, you had to go to a newspaper to see the listings or call that 800 number and list through all of the, all of the movies and hear what times they were. That would take like 10 minutes to find the movie times. Remember that? But now you open up your app or you open up whatever you've got, it's got that tomato score right next to it. It's got and the fresh, all, and that's all people go on.
That's all people care about. Nobody reads the reviews. For the most part, your average movie reviewer isn't going to read the reviews. They're going to look at the tomato score and they're going to go, oh, this movie sucks. Or, hey, this movie's great, when actually it sucks.
At the very least, some people will find a reviewer that aligns with their tastes and they might actually go read that. But I think the number of people that actually do that versus the number of people that just look at the score would be drastically different.
Yeah.
A lot of the takeaway that I have of this is it comes down to a few simple things. One of them, people are lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And we want to just know real fast, real quick, exactly what's going to entertain us. And we're not going to sit there and look through a whole bunch of things because we have our phones going off and we have this happening. We have five different people who want to hang out with us, or two, depending on who you are. There's a lot going on. So that number flashing out at you saying, hey, this has got a 96%, or hey, this has got a 52%, or hey, we got a tomato, or we got a rotten tomato. That's all easy to work with. The other thing is that Hollywood isn't really giving us enough new stuff to make us go to the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And when it is new, it's got to be something kind of blockbustery to get people to want to go see it, because it's a lot of money we're going to put into going to go see things on a giant screen that and some good sound, and possibly deal with people who are either going to ruin the experience with us or for us or not. You know, you have a lot of that going on. And then my third point is this. In my living room, I have a pretty nice TV, a pretty great sound system. I don't have a real big need to actually go to the theater. I go to the theater now just because, well, it's something big and I want to see it. Otherwise, I can wait till I can see it at home, because my home viewing experience is just as good, if not better, than going to see it in the theater.
There's another point in the article that I thought was interesting, too, where he talked about the shift between the generational shift between movie watchers now versus movie watchers, you know, last decade, the decade before, whatever, however far back you want to go. And they liked movies because, well, for the same reasons we like movies, but they liked the movies that they liked when they were younger. Their tastes don't align with their tastes now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like a movie that if they had watched the movie Hook now, they wouldn't like it. But they loved it when they were a kid, because you're a kid and you love those kinds of things. And that critical reception is a little bit different. So,
well, I don't mean to interrupt, but that's kind of like going, duh.
Yeah. Right.
That's true.
I think his point was that the shift is different from then to now than it was then to then.
So there's been a shift in the demographics of people who review movies. And I don't want to use the movie cliche of, you know, they're old and they just don't get it. But older reviewers, when we were kids, would review a movie like The Avengers and think that it was just intellectual nonsense.
Right.
You know, it's a kid's movie. I can't take that seriously because it's made for kids. Well, now, you know, the people who are writing the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes
are those kids.
Right. And they fall right in with the demographic of your 30-year-old male movie viewer. And when those people say, you know, Baywatch, which is a movie they should be genetically programmed to like, if they say, well, that sucked, people are going to pay more attention to that.
Yeah. And I recommend going and checking out that article, because it is really interesting. It's a very interesting read. It kind of sheds some interesting light and you can kind of hear what we've been talking about. It's a good article. So way to go, Forbes.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Hollywood Outsider Movie Battle Royale. That is where we take eight films, two favorites from each of our hosts, and we determine which one is the ultimate greatest film in the entire Ho universe. The rules are simple. We break it down to Ho North and Ho South, and basically each person presents their films, and we bring in our guest judge who will help us make the determination of what is ultimately going to make it to the final round to vie for the title of the greatest in the Ho universe. It is definitely a lot of fun, and it is time to get to it. Let's decide what is the greatest film of its genre. It's time for the Movie Battle Royale.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to our From the Outside In topic. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we are back to our Battle Royale. And this time around, we're going to duking it out about historical period piece movies. Now, we had to kind of clarify what that meant because there was some contention on the Facebook group a little bit about what that meant. historical period piece movie is a movie that is based on a real life event or a real life person, and it, you know, is historical in nature. So that's what we're going for. We're not necessarily, I don't even know what the argument was. What was the argument?
That it had to be based around accurate, like there had to be some factual elements to the movie,
right?
Which I don't know if that. I'm not even going to get into it. That's just what the argument was.
So it couldn't be just like loosely based on it. It actually had to be legitimate, like following the facts, so to speak.
Right. Well, not so much following the facts, but based on facts.
Right.
Like Saving Private Ryan took a real event, D-Day, and stuck it into a fictional movie.
Right.
So to me, that would qualify as a period piece because it's centered around an actual event, but it involves fictional characters.
Okay. Well, I think we're all good. We all have the same mindset here of what we're going for, and we're gonna duke it out, and we're gonna come up with one movie that is the end all be all historical period piece movie. You ready to go?
Hoorah!
So the way we're gonna do this is we're going to split this up. We split this up into four different sections, and as we mentioned at the top of the show, Aaron is not able to be here, but he's made a couple choices. Scotch is actually going to make his sales pitch for Aaron in his stead. Aaron's already made his votes on each matchup, and then we're going to duke it out in the, what do you call it, the semifinals, and then the finals just with the three of us, so there's no chance for a tie whatsoever, correct? Yep. So,
absolutely.
We split this up into Ho North and Ho South. As usual, Aaron and I are going to be in the Ho North, and then the Ho South is going to be John and Scotch. So I'm actually going to kick things off, and my first historical movie, period piece movie that I've got written down is one of my all-time favorite movies, and that's Amadeus.
A good effort. Oh, well, decidedly that. An excellent effort. You have shown us something quite new tonight.
It is new. It is, isn't it, sire?
Yes, indeed.
So, then you liked it. You really liked it, sire.
Well, of course I did. It's very good. Of course, now and then, just now and then, it seemed a touch,
What do you mean, sire?
Well, I mean, occasionally it seems to have, how shall one say, director?
Too many notes, Your Majesty.
Exactly. Very well put. Too many notes.
I don't understand. There are just as many notes, Majesty, as are required, neither more nor less.
If you haven't seen Amadeus, it is a film about Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. More specifically, Salieri, who was another musician that was an actual real-life musician that lived during the time of Mozart, who wasn't quite as accomplished as him, wasn't quite as talented, and basically, at the beginning of the movie, you find out that he is
calling himself responsible for Mozart's death, in essence saying that he killed Mozart. And the priest that is listening to his story learns about the history of Mozart and him growing up and how accomplished a musician Mozart actually was. I love this movie so much. This is one of my, you know how we talked in the past about movies that you watch when you're sick?
Yep.
And I don't mean to make it sound like this movie is awful for that, is awful by any means because of that. It's just my comfort movie. It's a movie that just makes me feel good. I love music, and I loved seeing stories about musicians that are just prodigies. That's what Amadeus was. But in terms of a historical period piece, this movie is fascinating to me because it's a glimpse into an era that I'm not familiar with. It just seems so foreign to modern day society. And when I think of that era, I'm not even sure what era that is. That 1600s, 1700s. It's a long time ago. I just assume people are just super stuffy and that's it. And for the most part in that movie, they kind of were, except for Mozart. And that's what I think is fascinating about this is that Mozart was a womanizer. He had a crazy sense of humor. He was vulgar. He was just not a nice guy. And to me, that was fascinating to see a person portrayed in a movie that you don't really see these people because you just know them for their work. You never see what the person really is like. And I'm not 100% certain how accurate that was. I do know that he was a womanizer. I don't know if he was that crazy as Tom Hulce portrays him in this movie, but I am just enraptured by this movie. And the go back and forth between him and Salieri is awesome. The final moments in this movie when Salieri is at his deathbed helping him compose this masterpiece that he's writing is just such a powerful moment where Salieri truly respects Mozart, even though he hates his guts because he's jealous of him. And it's a great movie. Absolutely love it. It's one of my picks for the greatest historical period piece movies of all time. My other one is one that, surprisingly, it took me a while to come up with because I was scrolling through trying to think of my best period piece movies. And then all of a sudden it just hit me like an iceberg. And that was Titanic.
Mr. Andrews? I saw the iceberg, and I see it in your eyes. Please tell me the truth.
This way. Please, this way. This way to the boat.
The ship will sink.
Are you certain?
Yes. In an hour or so. All this will be at the bottom of the Atlantic.
What?
Please, tell only who you must. I don't want to be responsible for a panic. And get to a boat, quickly. Don't wait. You remember what I told you about the boat?
Yes.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, you like that?
Wah, wah.
Titanic is a great period piece movie because... And it may be a little bit personal for me, but outside of like the love story and stuff, I've always been fascinated by the story of the sinking of the Titanic since I was a kid. I just thought it was fascinating that this giant ship could come down. And it's one of those things that's such a horrific thing, but you kind of wanted to see it happen. Something that large just sinking to the bottom of the ocean and seeing it sticking up straight up. As a kid, that's all I wanted to do was actually be there to see that happen. And James Cameron basically gave us the best, the closest that we could get in terms of that, because he went to historical records and checked about how the ship came apart and broke apart and which end went up first and what angles and all this. And they had all the details down to the rooms and the clothes of the era. It was just so interesting to see what it was like back then. And on top of that, it was a great love story. I really did like the love story. Granted, it was a bit Romeo and Juliet, and that it was a very short-lived romance that caused a lot of problems. But at the end of the day, it wasn't even about that. It was about trying to survive and get and make some room on that door for the other guy so he doesn't die. And
but there was room on the door. Mythbusters proved that.
Did they?
Yeah. Jack died for nothing.
They could have both survived, but
Like you do.
What do? They get the actual dimensions of the door and.
Yeah, they use the dimensions of the door from the ship and calculated her weight and his weight. And they actually tried to put two people on it and it floated with no problem.
Floated just fine.
Yep.
Way to go, Rose. Yep. Way to go.
Way to kill Jack.
That bitch.
So those are my two picks for historical period piece movies. We've got Amadeus and you've got Titanic. Now we've already got Aaron's vote. Yes.
Yes, I have his, am I giving his vote right now?
Yes, go ahead, give his vote.
Yeah, for that one, he's voting for Titanic.
Okay, so we got one vote for Titanic, two more to go.
Yeah, well, actually, he threw in a comment, so I feel like I have to comment for Aaron. I don't like Amadeus, he's overrated, like Foo Fighters overrated. So, there you go. There's the opinion of Aaron Peterson.
I think Aaron just pissed off Steve Peterson, like you have no idea.
Okay, for my vote, I'll go ahead and go next. I actually agree with Aaron, although not about the Foo Fighters thing. I just wasn't a fan of Amadeus, and I honestly can't tell you why. Something about that movie just bugged me, and maybe it was how over the top he was portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan, and I know Vicky really likes that movie, and I really don't. So my vote is for Titanic, because even though Rose did kill Jack for no reason, I think it's a better movie.
Okay. John, your vote doesn't really matter right now, but what do you think?
Well, I think Amadeus is actually kind of a great movie. I do remember watching it and enjoying it. And the thing that that always stuck out to me is like F. Murray Abraham acts his ass off.
Yes, he does.
That entire movie. And it's very obvious when you put him up against some of the people that are in that movie that he is acting his ass off. You believe he is Salieri. You believe in that role. And everybody else is like acting. They're just like, hey, how you doing? I'm acting. I'm here to act. And it's obvious. It's scary how obvious it is. And it bothers me. So that being said, when I watched Titanic, if I wasn't for the fact that I was strapped to my chair and I knew I was someplace safe or comfy, I'd be having panic attacks the entire time because I would believe I was on that damn boat following around these two people like a creeper. And just enjoying the fact that I'm there. You almost believe it. And I think that's the core reason why period pieces are great is because it puts you in that situation.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
So that's why I'm going to have to say Titanic.
All right. So it's a clean sweep. Titanic takes the cake for the first round, overtakes Amadeus. And Titanic will move on to the next round. Now, at this point, normally we would have Aaron give his two movies, but since he's absent, Scotch, you're going to go ahead and sell us on his two movies. What are they?
Yeah, I'm standing in for Aaron very poorly to this point, so I'll go ahead and try to make up for that. Aaron's first movie is 12 Years a Slave.
So you settle into your role as Platt then?
My back is thick with scars for protesting my freedom. Do not accuse me.
I accuse you of nothing. I cannot accuse. I have done dishonorable things to survive, and for all of them, I have ended up here. No better than if I had stood up for myself. God, forgive me. Solomon, let me weep for my children.
Which I gotta say, that's an awesome choice.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is... Have you seen it?
I have.
It's insanely hard to watch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get into any details because it's recent enough to where I don't want to spoil it for anybody. And if you haven't seen this movie, I'm telling you right now, go see it. It's going to make you uncomfortable. It's going to make you cringe. It'll probably make you cry at least one point during the movie, but it should be required viewing for almost everybody in the country should go see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a free violinist living in the North, African-American named Solomon Northrup, who is kidnapped and sold into slavery in Louisiana. And this is a man who was living up to this point a normal life and then wakes up as a slave. He was drugged, kidnapped, and taken to the South and sold into slavery. Imagine your life doing that. Imagine going through that in your life. This movie puts you in his shoes, mm-hmm. and it lets you experience what those people experienced. And
in brutal fashion.
As brutal as this movie is, it's actually probably still understated,
mm-hmm.
what those people went through. And the director made it intentionally hard to watch. There's a scene in that movie, and I actually timed it today after I found out that I was going to be presenting this for Aaron. It's almost 3 minutes long. and it's Solomon Northrop's character hanging from a tree. Do you remember the scene?
Mm-hmm.
And I forget.
He's on his tiptoes, and if he relaxes his feet, he's going to die. And he's from a hangman's noose hanging from this tree, and people are going about their business like this is normal. I mean, there are kids playing in the background. There are people walking past him, just living their lives throughout on that plantation. Like, this is an everyday thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's literally 1 inch away from strangling to death. And you can tell by the way the cinematography is done that he was literally there all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Until somebody finally comes over and cuts him down. That was normal. That was what those people lived with. It's one of the hardest movie scenes to watch. And it's like unbroken camera shot. It's totally just one of the most devastating scenes I've ever seen.
All right.
I did a little bit of research on this just to not let Aaron down. There's not a bad performance in this movie. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the first name of this guy. Ejiofor. How do you pronounce his first
Ejiofor.
Name? That's his last name.
Chiwetel.
Yeah. Sure. He is absolutely amazing in this.
Mm-hmm.
There's an actress named Lupita Nyong'o.
Nyong'o.
Who won an Oscar. It was her first on-screen performance ever. And she won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. Everybody needs to see this movie.
Just once, though.
Yeah. I've only seen it once. I'm not going to watch it again. Not because it's not a good movie, but because it's that hard to watch. It was directed by Steve McQueen. It was nominated for 9 Oscars and won 3 of them. Best Picture, Best Supporting Actress for Lupita Nyong'o, and Best Adapted Screenplay by John Ridley. I always do, when I do these battle royales, I always try to find a piece or two of trivia to go along with the movie, just because they're usually entertaining. I found no entertaining or fun trivia about this movie. I found trivia, but it's all depressing. The two that I came up with is that Solomon Northrop actually wrote the book 12 Years a Slave. This movie is based on his life. He wrote it as an autobiography. 4 years after he got back to the North, he disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to him. Historians have looked. To this day, nobody knows what happened to him. He just dropped off the face of the earth 4 years after this whole ordeal ended.
I have a guess.
Yeah, I have a guess, too. And it's not a very happy ending. The other piece of trivia that I found, and this is kind of indicative of all the information I found about this movie, the tree that they used for the lynching scenes in this movie was actually a lynching tree. And it was surrounded by the graves, the unmarked graves of slaves who were murdered at that tree.
Well, that's kind
of
eerie.
So the director was definitely going for realism when he made this movie.
All right.
The last little bit had a budget of $20 million, grossed $178.4 million. Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 98 or a 96.
All right.
So there's 12 Years a Slave. And Aaron's next movie, and I have a feeling we all know why he chose this one, is Tombstone.
Sheriff Behan. Gentlemen. Sheriff. Have you met Doc Holliday?
Kiss on you, wife.
Mr. Holliday.
Forgive me if I don't shake hands.
So, how's our little town suit you?
Fine. Fine. You know, I was thinking, what this town could really use is a racetrack.
Really? That's not a bad idea. Send a signal we're growing up.
Way ahead of yourselves, aren't you, boys? This is just another mining camp.
Have you seen how everyone dresses? Awful Tony for a mining camp. No, sir, the die is cast. We are growing. Be as big as San Francisco in a few years and just as sophisticated.
Easy, Jens. Think of private affairs.
Just raise that arm.
I'll kill you!
Very cosmopolitan.
Filmed in 1993, which is the story of the gunfight at the OK Corral and all the human stories leading up to and following that event. For those of you who are not aware of it, the gunfight at the OK Corral actually happened.
Right.
It was a gunfight between Wyatt Earp and his brothers and friend and a gang known as the Cowboys. The directors of this movie tried to make it as accurate as possible. The fight choreography of the actual gunfight at the OK Corral was done by recreations and eyewitness statements. Everything that you see, every single shot that they fired was actually the way that gunfight went down.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
To the point that there's a scene where one of the Cowboys has the drop on Doc Holliday, who's played by Val Kilmer. And he says, I've got you now, Doc, you son of a bitch, to which Doc Holliday replies, you're a daisy if you do. That was printed in the Tombstone newspaper the following day as a direct quote.
Hmm.
that whole scene actually went exactly the way they filmed it. The only small difference is they got two people transposed. The guy who ran out the back of the OK Corral and survived, and the guy who ran into the photo studio were reversed. In real life, the guy who ran in the photo studio was the one who ran out the back, and the one who ran out the back in the movie was the one who ran in the photo studio. Mm. Other than that, every single step taken in that gunfight was real. The town was an amazing recreation of the town of Tombstone. They did do two sets to make it look bigger than it actually was because it was a very small town. But they tried to be as accurate as possible. There's one other scene, and if you've seen the movie, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, where Wyatt Earp kills Curly Bill at the creek. And he just kind of walks out into a hail of gunfire and they all miss him. And he just walks right up to Curly Bill and shoots him. That scene was recreated from Curly Bill's actual testimony right before he died. Because when he got shot on the creek bank, he lived long enough to crawl to a nearby house and he told the guy what happened. And it was exactly the way that scene went down. So the director
is nuts.
Isn't that crazy? And you remember that scene. It was insane. He just walked out into the gunfire and everybody missed him from like 5 feet away. And that apparently is exactly how that went down. The performances in this movie are incredible. Kurt Russell is perfect as Wyatt Earp. Val Kilmer probably did his best performance ever as Doc Holliday.
I'm your Huckleberry.
Yeah. You know what that refers to?
I don't.
I actually found that in the trivia. That was the name for pallbearers that were carrying your casket.
Really?
Yeah, they called them Huckleberries. So everybody thought that that referred to like Huckleberry Finn, which came out at that time. He was actually saying, I'm your Huckleberry, meaning I'm going to put you in the ground.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like my eyes have been open.
Makes that so much more awesome.
Yeah, it makes that scene amazing. This is where Aaron Wood raps, you know, poetic about Kurt Russell for a couple minutes. I'm not going to do that. To me, the standout performance in this was Michael Biehn as Johnny Ringo.
Mm-hmm.
He...
Michael Biehn?
I've always heard it pronounced Michael
Biehn.
Yeah.
Michael Biehn.
Yeah. He's crazy in the movie, and he pulls that off beautifully. That scene at the end where he has the shootout with Doc Holliday, dude, you can smell crazy on him, mm-hmm. to quote Bruce Banner. He pulls off nuts just absolutely beautifully in this movie. The two funny trivia I found about this, the character of Billy Claiborne is played by an actor named Wyatt Earp, who is actually Wyatt Earp's, the real Wyatt Earp's fifth cousin.
Hmm.
Played one of the cowboys in this movie. And when the Earps arrive in Tombstone, there's a grave marker in the background that can be seen in the cemetery that says, here lies Lester Moore, four slugs from a 44, no less, L-E-S, no more. That's an actual grave from the town of Tombstone.
Hmm.
That wasn't done as a joke. There is a grave in Tombstone, Arizona that has that exact inscription on it.
Interesting.
Which I thought was absolutely hilarious. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 94% viewer score. $25 million budget, grossed $56.5 million. No Oscar nominations, but MTV liked it. It got nominated for two MTV Video Music Awards. Or Video Movie Awards. And that's all I got. It's an amazing movie. I love Tombstone. I thought it was great.
It is a great movie. There's so many quotable lines. I love the scene where I think it's Billy Bob Thornton is sitting at a poker table or something, and he confronts Kurt Russell, and Kurt Russell says something to the effect of, "Why don't you skin that smoke wagon and see what happens?" I just love that line.
Some of the most amazing lines in a movie. Oh, and by the way, all the mustaches were real. That was an insistence by the director.
Really?
Yep. None of those are prosthetic. Those guys had to grow out those. Beautiful, so enormous.
They had to get that started way early before production of that movie.
Those are all real.
Nice.
My favorite scene in that movie is that shootout between Doc Holliday and John Ringo at the end.
Because
you can tell that the only person on earth that John Ringo is afraid of is Doc Holliday. Mm-hmm. And that's the guy who showed up to kill him.
Nice.
That was just a perfect way to do that scene.
All right, go ahead and take your vote.
My vote for that one, I gotta give it to...
Well, you don't... Oh, yeah, you do get a vote.
I get to vote.
Aaron doesn't get to vote,
but I get to vote.
Mm-hmm.
My vote out of this one is... 12 Years a Slave is a much better movie, but to me, Tombstone was a better period piece.
Okay.
Actually, so I'm going to go with Tombstone.
All right, John, what about you?
Going back to my criteria as to what makes a good period piece and what doesn't. When I watch Tombstone, I don't feel like I'm watching something that is period piece. I feel like I'm watching a fake story. It might all be real, but for whatever reason, I'm very well aware of the fact that I'm watching a movie. And that's really kind of why when I think about this, I have to stick with my guns on that whole idea and go with 12 Years a Slave. Because when I watch that, I feel like I'm in something and part of something, and it affects me greatly. And Tombstone really just entertains me. So yeah, 12 Years a Slave.
Interesting. So I've got the deciding vote right now.
You're the tiebreaker.
And here's where I'm torn, because you guys both gave two different criteria for why you chose each movie. Scotch, you gave the reason that you just enjoyed Tombstone more, even though you think that 12 Years a Slave is a better made movie.
I thought Tombstone was a better period piece because it more mirrored an actual event.
Okay. And I didn't know some of the stuff that you told me about that until just now, that they went down to that excruciating detail that you're talking about. I find that interesting. I don't know how much 12 Years a Slave mirrors the actual events.
Well, it's based on an autobiography.
Okay.
So I'm going to assume it's very factually accurate, but I don't know how well the movie follows the book. I've done a lot just because I found it fascinating as a kid, kind of like you with the Titanic. I read up a lot on the battle at the OK Corral. I just thought it was fascinating to me.
Okay.
And this movie got everything right from what I could see. That was why it got my vote.
Gotcha. Well, I'm gonna go with Tombstone. And because while I think both have historical accuracies embedded in them, at the end of the day, the reason I watch movies is to be entertained. And 12 Years a Slave is a movie, as powerful as it is and as hard it is to watch and how accurate it may be, it's not a movie I'm ever going to watch again. I don't see me ever putting in that DVD or Blu-ray and watching that movie on purpose again. Meanwhile, Tombstone is one that I've watched YouTube clips on just to go back and see scenes again.
We all have.
and the scenes are just so, it's a fun movie. And if it's as historically accurate as you're talking, down to tombstone markings and following the headlines or a recounting of a guy on his deathbed, it still falls in line with an actual period piece. So it's going to get my vote. So, Tombstone over Tombstone?
Tombstone?
Tombstone.
That's a whole different thing, dude.
Yeah. Tombstone is going to win over 12 Years a Slave and moves on to the next round. So when we get to the semifinals, it will be Titanic versus Tombstone. And now it's time to move on to the Ho South. John, it is your turn, sir. What two movies do you have for us?
So coming up first, I have, based off of the personal letters of Colonel Robert Gould Shaw, and a book called The Gallant Rush, I Give You Glory.
Oh, I see. So the white man give you a couple of stripes. Next thing you know, you hollering, ordering everybody around like you the master himself. Nigga, you ain't nothing but the white man's dog.
What are you? So full of hate, you just want to go out and fight everybody. Because you've been whipped and chased by hounds. Well, that might not be living, but it sure as hell ain't dying. And dying's what these white boys been doing for going on 3 years now. Dying by the thousands. Dying for you, fool. I know, because I dug the graves. And all the time I'm digging, I'm asking myself when, oh Lord, is going to be our time. Well, time's coming when we're going to have to ante up. Ante up and kick in like men. Like men!
This movie had me going on in so many different directions when I was a kid, because it was something that I would stop and watch every single time it was on cable. And I've watched it from the beginning, from the middle. I've watched it from every single direction I can. And each time it just captures me. I love the idea that this is the first time we see Matthew Broderick starting to break away from, hey, I'm Ferris Bueller. Denzel Washington, he shows up just to make women swoon all over the place. Morgan Freeman starts to remind us that we want the voice in the inside of our head to sound much more like him than it does us. And this movie puts in action that you can feel. It's a story about everybody coming together and working together. And I really enjoyed the message behind it. And what everyone had to go through to change part of the world for a little bit. It's something that I thought was great. It's something I stop and watch every single time. I get sucked into it. I feel like I'm there. And it was one of the first movies of this type that really made me stop and watch it. Because I think this movie came out in 1990 or that area. I wouldn't watch stuff like this mostly on purpose, because I just, you know, like now I really want to just escape and watch something that's a lot more fun. But this movie just told me a story that I could appreciate and I could understand. And I just love it because of that. I want more stories where people are working together to overcome some big obstacle like they were in this movie. So that's why I like it so much. And then coming up after that, I have, based off the novel by the same name, Dances with Wolves.
We're charged with apprehending hostiles and recovering stolen property, retrieving white captives taken in hostile raidings.
There are no hostiles.
We will ascertain that for ourselves. Now, if you'll guide us to these camps and serve as an interpreter, your conduct will be reevaluated.
What conduct?
With all due respect, your status as a traitor might improve should you choose to cooperate with the United States Army.
There's nothing for you to do out here.
You willing to cooperate in that? Well, speak up.
Shumani tu tanka obwachimi yelo.
What's that?
Shumani tu tanka obwachimi yelo. Nitaku napish nielo. Wichoye inichi pipish nielo.
It's based off of a novel, and the novel really is a side story of the Civil War and everything that went on with it. And it's, so it's not really a real person or real events or anything else like that, but it does incorporate some of the story of the Civil War. And you have Kevin Costner, who plays a soldier who decides that instead of living without a leg, he's going to have himself killed on the field. And he accidentally becomes his hero in the process. So his reward is he gets the horse. They tell him he can have whatever post he wants, and he decides he wants to go out to the frontier before the frontier goes away, and he gets experienced life on his own out in the middle of nowhere. I think there's a beauty behind that, and the way they shot it was great, and just seeing the big, vast, open fields is not something we get to see that much of anymore, and the story is fantastic because, so you have a guy who learns how to appreciate a whole nother group of people. They're so different from him. And he decides that he wants to make that part of his life. And I think there's a beauty behind it, and I really enjoy it. And again, this is the kind of movie that when I get sick and tired, or I just want to go on a trip someplace else that's more realistic, this is where I go. And I really love this movie for that reason. So, of these two movies, Scott, which ones are your favorites?
Between Dances with Wolves and Glory, I'm gonna go with Dances with Wolves, just because I sincerely loved that movie much more than I did Glory. Glory was one of those movies that when I was growing up, all my friends just raved about, and I watched it, but I just thought it was okay. It just kind of meandered more. Dances with Wolves meanders as well, but I was more intrigued by the story with Dances with Wolves. Especially because it led to one of my favorite current movies, which is Avatar, the remake. Nah, I'm just kidding.
No, not really. Avatar Dances with Wolves in Space, definitely.
Yeah, Dances with Smurfs.
Giant Smurfs.
So yeah, Dances with Wolves gets my vote. To me, it was a more entertaining movie. Historical accuracies aside, I just liked it better. It was a more entertaining story, and I can't remember the actress's name, but she wanted to be on Battlestar Galactica playing the president. And
Mary McDonnell.
Yeah. And she was awesome. And Kevin Costner. How can you go wrong with Kevin Costner? Yeah. I mean, Matthew Broderick.
Superman.
Postman.
I love Postman.
Waterworld.
I liked Waterworld.
I did too. I'm sorry.
Who doesn't like Waterworld?
I don't want to admit that out loud, but I like both of those.
I saw that movie like 7 times. It ruled. Nothing? Nobody? Okay. No, moving on. So yeah, Dancing with Wolves is my vote. Scotch, what about you?
Oh man, this is like a really, really, really hard choice for me. This is actually the second time I've had to choose between Glory and another movie in one of these battle royales, because Glory was one of Aaron's picks for the best war picture. He had Glory and Platoon, which was also a really freaking hard choice to make. I'm actually going to go with Glory this time. As much as I like Dances with Wolves, and I do, I love that movie, but Glory, it had such amazing performances by everybody. And the performances in Dances with Wolves were good, but man, the performances in Glory were just Oscar worthy. They were all amazing. Morgan Freeman, Denzel Washington, Matthew Broderick, everybody who was in that movie, even Cary Elwes was in that movie. Wasn't Wesley in that? Yeah. It's just
Wesley.
Yeah, I did. It's just from beginning to end, I was gripped by that movie. And especially the events at the end where they're trying to take the fort on the beach was just one of the most beautifully shot battle scenes I've ever seen in a movie. And it brings the Civil War to life in a way that not many movies had before that movie came out. So that one gets my vote. I'm voting for Glory.
All right, we're down to Aaron being the deciding vote for this one.
So Aaron's vote for these is also Glory. And his comment was, I like Dances with Wolves better as Pocahontas. Which is
was it Disney one?
Yeah, it's basically the same story if you think about it, only reverse. The Indians go to live with the white people instead of the other way around. But
okay,
I get it. Yeah, so his vote is Glory.
All right, so Glory moves on, overtakes Dances with Wolves, and we are on to our last initial matchup. And Scotch, you get to go again, man. And what are your two movies?
I'm like, I feel like I'm talking too much in this show. Just so you know.
No such thing.
It is a podcast, so I guess that's the point, right? Mm-hmm. My first one, filmed in 2003, is The Last Samurai.
Nathan! Katsumoto has attacked the railroad at the border of his province.
We cannot govern the country in which we cannot travel freely. He must be stopped now. My railroad is a priority for this country.
You're not ready.
The rebels don't have a single rifle. They're savages with bows and arrows.
Whose sole occupation for the last 1,000 years has been war.
You have superior firepower and a larger force. I am ordering the regiment to move against the rebel Katsumoto. You will track him down and engage him.
Load.
Mr. Graham, tell this man to fire at me.
I beg your pardon?
Tell this man, if he does not shoot me, I will kill him.
Captain, if I might have a word.
Tell him.
Starring Tom Cruise and Ken, is it Watanabe or Watanabe? I've heard it both
Watanabe.
Ways. Ken Watanabe. The Last Samurai is the story of an alcoholic Civil War soldier turned mercenary named Captain Algren, played by Tom Cruise, who gets sent to Japan to help modernize their army and defeat an uprising by the samurai led by a samurai named Katsumoto, who is played by Ken Watanabe. The army is initially rushed into battle, and they are absolutely massacred by the samurai. Algren is taken prisoner and is initially treated as a prisoner. He's taken back to the village where the samurai live. He's held for an entire winter, and he's treated very poorly at first until he earns the respect of the samurai, mainly by getting his ass kicked repeatedly.
That works.
Once he gets through that, he's eventually accepted as one of them, and they actually begin to train him in the ways of the samurai. They recognize that he's a very accomplished soldier once he gets past the whole alcoholism thing, which being locked away from alcohol for an entire winter would probably accomplish pretty well. And he begins to realize that they have pretty much found the style of living that he's been looking for.
Okay.
He became an alcoholic due to the things that he had been forced to do in the war against the Native Americans after the Civil War. He served in Custer's 7th Cavalry and was part of that before the massacre. And he has trouble living with that, and he decides that he can find redemption by living with the samurai. So that's basically the entire story.
So it's Dancing with Wolves.
It's Dances with Wolves in Japan. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's an amazingly good movie. The two main performances by Cruise and Watanabe are absolutely outstanding. Ken Watanabe was actually nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. This is actually the first time he starred in an American movie, and it's the very first time he spoke English on screen.
Really?
Yes, and he did an amazing job with it. There are other notable performances. Billy Connolly plays Sergeant Gant, who doesn't make it very far into the movie, but his character was awesome right
up to the point where
he died. I'm assuming people have seen this. It's 14 years old. If not, that's on you, people. Watch more movies. Masato Harada plays a character named Amura, who is kind of the bad guy in this movie. He is really bad. He's a politician. He's a bureaucrat. You hate him from the minute you see him. And Timothy Spall, who plays Wormtail in the Harry Potter movies, plays a chronographer who wants to chronicle Captain Algren's story.
Oh, okay.
So he kind of tails them throughout the movie, and his character is actually 180 degrees from Wormtail. He's one of the most likable characters in the movie. It is Dances with Wolves in Japan. It's great for all the same reasons, but to me it had much better performances.
Okay.
It's one of Tom Cruise's best performances. I'm not a Tom Cruise fan. You know, we talk about shows jumping the shark, he jumped the couch. And as soon as he jumped the couch, I was kind of done being a Tom Cruise fan. But this is actually one of his best performances. I loved him in it. It had a $140 million budget. It grossed $456 million worldwide. Rotten Tomatoes score of 66% by the critics, which is probably a lot of Tom Cruise hate because the audience score was 88%. The two interesting trivia that I found out about this is that The Last Samurai doesn't refer to any one person. Everybody reads the title and goes, oh, you know, Tom Cruise is the last samurai, or Katsumoto was the last samurai. The plural of samurai is samurai.
Yeah.
The title of the movie actually refers to the entire group
right.
that's being led by Katsumoto. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize that. The other one is that Tom Cruise almost died making this movie. He was riding a mechanical horse for one of the battle scenes, and one of the characters was supposed to swing a sword at his head, and the horse was supposed to duck, and the horse malfunctioned. And the actor who was swinging the very real metal sword figured it out and stopped the sword less than an inch away from Tom Cruise's neck.
Oh, my gosh. Whoa.
Yeah, he damn near got decapitated making this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think Amanda Sink is kind of crying right now that didn't happen.
Sorry, Amanda, but he survived.
Why is with all the Tom Cruise hate lately? I didn't know so many people hated him.
The Mummy.
It was well before The Mummy.
I know, but he's not making good choices. So anyway, that's my first one. That's The Last Samurai. And it was kind of a last sort of choice for me, because my next choice is the 1992 classic Last of the Mohicans.
I'll take you north up to your own land. You submit, you hear? You stop! You survive! You stay alive, no matter what occurs! I will find you! No matter how long it takes, no matter how far!
It's set in 1757, which is 19 years before the revolution. It takes place during the French Indian War. One of the reasons why I love this movie, before I even get into the synopsis, is that no other movie has been made about that war that I can think of.
I can't think of one either.
It's such an important part of our country's history, and nobody even knows what it is.
Well, especially for how it set up the American Revolution.
It did. It directly led to the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. And if you ask people, what was the French-Indian War? They'll tell you it was a war between the French and the Indians.
No, they fought together.
Yes, they fought together against the British. You'd be surprised at how many people don't know that. Mm-hmm. it's ridiculously beautiful cinematography. This movie is absolutely incredible to watch. The filming was done actually in North Carolina in a pre-planned forest that was printed over 100 years ago. Planted over 100 years ago.
No, they had 3D printing.
Yeah, they had 3D printing forests. But the director thought that it looked more like the unspoiled wilderness of the Northwest or the Northeast would look.
Oh, okay.
So that was why they filmed it down there. It was starring, I'm sorry, I just completely lost my train of thought. It stars Daniel Day-Lewis as Hawkeye, who was a white trapper who was raised by the Mohican Indians. And it centers around the battle for Fort William Henry, which was a siege by the French of an English fort. That really happened. It was a real event. The Colonel Monroe, who was commanding officer at Fort William Henry, was real. His daughters were real.
Hmm.
Whether or not the character of Hawkeye existed, nobody knows. But all the other characters portrayed in the movie, with the exception of Hawkeye and his two friends and an Indian, a Huron named Magua, played by Wes Studi in an absolutely amazing performance, everybody else was real. And the events that happened around Fort William Henry are what inspired the original novel to be written. There's a scene where the fort falls. I'm not going to get into too much of the plot because I don't want to give it away, even though it's well over 20 years old. But there's a scene where after the fort surrenders, the British are allowed to leave, and they are promptly massacred by Huron Indians after being granted safe passage by the French. That really happened, and that was what inspired this book to be written.
Hmm.
So the entire movie, other than the love story between Hawkeye and one of Colonel Monroe's daughters, all of it is based on fact.
Madeline Stowe.
And that is Madeline Stowe, who had an absolutely amazing performance. Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's not where I saw that sentence going.
That's because you're a filthy old man. Daniel Day-Lewis, who's known for really getting into his roles, actually went and lived in the wilderness of North Carolina for almost half a year, trapping, fishing, and living off the land to get his mind around playing this character.
Wow, that's dedication.
Yeah, it is. Wes Studi, as I mentioned earlier, is absolutely amazing as Magua. His character is intent on wiping out Colonel Monroe and his family because Colonel Monroe killed his family. And he's kind of like a Native American Terminator. It's like his entire reason for being is to wipe out this British colonel and his two daughters. And once you hear why, you almost empathize with him. As vicious as he is in this movie, you can understand why he is the way he is.
That's always a cool villain to me when you can almost maybe not sympathize, but empathize with the villain. I always like that.
Yeah, and you definitely can. War does terrible things to people, and I'm sure he was probably a decent human being before the British wiped out his family, and then it turned him into just a raving, bloodthirsty killer. Mm-hmm. And that comes across really, really well in the movie. It was nominated for one Oscar, and it won Best Sound. And it had a budget of $40 million, grossed $72 million. It was number one the weekend it opened with $10 million, which back in 92 was actually a pretty solid opening weekend. And much like Saving Private Ryan, it inserted a factual event, the Siege of Fort William Henry, into a fictional love story. Which I love movies that can do that. Mm-hmm. And I like movies that educate.
Like this, Titanic?
Like Titanic. And like my movie, Scott. It, to me, when you can watch a movie and walk away going, wow, I never knew that. Mm-hmm. I never knew that even happened. To me, that's a great movie. When Aaron and I went to see Anthropoid, it was the same way. I'm a big history nut. I knew nothing about that story. So I was actually educated by a movie, and it inspired me to go home and look stuff up to learn more about it. As soon as I watched Last of the Mohicans, I looked up everything I could find about the Battle of Fort William Henry because it fascinated me seeing it in the movie. It's an awesome movie. I definitely recommend it. Rotten Tomatoes score of 94%, so a lot of people agree with me. And that is my last one.
All right, you're going to take your vote. Who do you want to start with?
I don't get to vote.
I know, you get to say who goes first.
Oh, jeez. You know, I've done this enough, you'd think I would have figured this out by now. Scott, go ahead. What's your vote?
All right, so if I had to choose between Last Samurai and Last of the Mohicans, this one's a little bit of an easy choice for me for the simple fact, and this may be controversial, but when I was a kid, all my friends, much like Glory, just raved about Last of the Mohicans. Like, it was this great movie, and it was one of those that I watched, and I just it just was boring to me. Granted, I'm looking at it in nostalgia glasses, but Last Samurai was so entertaining, and just watching Tom Cruise's performance was much more interesting to me. Granted, Daniel Day-Lewis is a fantastic actor. He's done some amazing things, but I always fall back on these, even historical accuracy aside, I just go for the one that makes the more entertaining movie to me, and Last Samurai takes the cake in that regard.
John?
So both of these movies were in my movie blind spot, and for both different reasons. Last Samurai was in my blind spot because it came out in 2003, which I had just spent the last 4 years of my life being surrounded by people who go, oh my God, Japan, it's so great. Oh my God, this thing's about Japan. We should do it. You might have to read the movie. It's going to be great. It's Japan. And I was really over the whole idea of it. I was really just tired of it. So I never bothered with it. So I went and saw it. I rented it this last weekend over VOD, and that was actually a wonderful experience for me. I mean, I fell into the movie, which is something I like to do when it comes to period pieces, and it was great. Then, Last of the Mohicans, I never watched it because of Daniel Day-Lewis. I don't know what it is about him. I don't know if it's his crazy acting, but I always think twice when it comes to what he does because it's just, I don't know. I don't get it. He just doesn't do anything for me. And then when I hear these stories of how he goes and does this, you know, he goes to a store looking like Lincoln and he acts like Lincoln the entire time, I think psychopath. So I never bother. Wow. I never bothered to watch it before. But both of these movies were great. But if I had to choose between one or the other, I'm going to go with the one that put me more into a world that I wanted to see and that sucked me in more. And that's going to be Last Samurai.
And that was your vote as well, right?
It was.
Okay, so Aaron's vote doesn't matter, but he actually did vote for Last of the Mohicans. But Last Samurai takes it.
All right. So Last Samurai moves on, overtakes Last of the Mohicans. And now we can go on to the semifinals. We're getting closer and closer to determining our best historical period piece movie. So we've got the whole North. In my segment, we had Titanic, and we've got Titanic versus Tombstone, correct?
Yes.
So Titanic versus Tombstone. Now, the way this works is just three of us left. Aaron's vote doesn't count anymore because he obviously didn't know which one won. So between Titanic and Tombstone, who's going to take the cake here? John, let's start with you.
Titanic.
All right.
As much as I want to give it to Tombstone, I have to stick to the idea that Tombstone still feels like a movie to me, whereas Titanic feels like something I could fall into.
All right.
Now, I'm going to go exactly the opposite. I'm going to pick Tombstone because Tombstone to me feels like a period piece, which was what this battle is about, the best period piece. And Titanic seems like an event movie. Like, it takes place during a certain time period.
Like a disaster movie?
It's more about the event. It's almost more like a disaster movie than, for me, a period piece, the time period is part of the story. And in Titanic, to me, it's not. Titanic is more of a disaster movie to me. So that's why I'm going with Tombstone, because to me, it tells a real story that brings the West to life for me.
Hmm.
So that's my choice.
That's really interesting. Now I'm torn between choosing my movie and the movie that you just might have sold me on in terms of historical accuracy. But, man, I'm genuinely torn. But I would feel guilty going against my own choice. I like your I like your reasoning. But still, at the end of the day, I've watched Titanic so many times. Not like those freaks that went and saw it 67 times in the theater back when it was actually in the theater. But
sorry, ladies, he was talking to you.
We know who you are.
Yeah. Seriously, that was like on the news. People like went to see this thing like multiple tens of times to see this movie. Like it's going to be on DVD shortly, ladies. I promise. Yeah, I'm still going to go Titanic. Just because rewatchability, it's so interesting. It's like a 2.5-3 hour movie, and I still just love to watch it. It's still one I love to pop in. Not to disparage Tombstone, it's a great movie, great performances and everything. But I think I've seen that movie 1.5 times. So
really,
yeah.
That's all. Oh my God, I've seen that movie more times than I can count.
Well, and that's why Titanic's getting my vote, because I've seen that one more times than I probably could count. So
I'm pretty sure I've seen Tombstone a hell of a lot more times than I've seen Titanic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that movie. I really do. I just can't. I feel like I said, I think it's a movie. And that's where my problem comes in. It's very Hollywood to me.
Which is really funny if you think about it. I'm not trying to change your vote, but it's so accurate to what actually happened, and yet it still feels like a movie. I find that interesting.
I agree with you. That is a totally interesting point. It's just it is like when you're telling me all these things about how accurate they're trying to be, I'm like, wow, really? That's God damn it. Wow. All right. I'm going to have to. No, I can't, because it still feels like a movie.
That's where I was. Yeah, we were on the fence, but nope, Titanic wins it. Yeah. Titanic goes on to the finals, and now we move on to Ho South.
I tried, Aaron. I tried to defend your movie. Didn't work. Sorry.
John, refresh my memory. Who, Glory took this, right?
Yes.
Are we certain?
Yes.
Okay, Glory took.
Glory was the winner.
I was having a brain fart there for a second.
It's Glory and Last Samurai is what we're voting on.
Glory and Last Samurai. So Glory and Last Samurai, between these two movies, which one takes the cake? Scott, let's start with you.
Not just because it's mine, but because I think it's a better period piece that brings to light kind of the clashing between modern culture and feudal Japan. I found to be absolutely fascinating in that movie.
Okay.
The bad guy, from a historical standpoint, Katsumoto was the bad guy. He's running a resistance against the emperor. Mm-hmm. From Katsumoto's mindset, he was in service of the emperor, trying to protect him from Western influence. So you've got such conflicted characters that are portrayed so brilliantly in this movie. The costumes were perfect. The swordplay was amazing. I loved it from beginning to end. So I'm going to go with mine just because I think it's a better movie.
All right.
Last Samurai.
Last Samurai from Scotch. John, what about you?
You know, I'd love to be able to sit here and tell you that Dances with Samurai is a better movie than Glory. Because it's not a better movie than Glory.
You're not going to, right?
Right. So... But if I were to look at this, these two movies and talk, and so they both bring me into a world. I get sucked into this world. I enjoy the story they're telling me. So which one of these two stories do I want to spend more time with? It's going to be Dances with Samurai.
There you go.
Wow. Didn't see that coming.
I really didn't.
I didn't either. I could have sworn you were gearing up to say Glory.
So did I. All right. Well, not that my vote matters, but I was going to vote Last Samurai as well. So that one is a clean unanimous sweep for that side. So now we are up to our final vote. And we've got Titanic versus Last Samurai. Yep. Two great period piece movies. And we can only have one. There can only be one Highlander.
Yes.
So I'm going to go ahead and kick things off. Easy vote for me. Titanic. I love Last Samurai, but again, comes down to which one I've watched the most, which one I find the more enjoyable movie. And that's Titanic. John?
Titanic or Samurai?
This is the second time I've been in this position, by the way. My movie made it to the finals last time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do I let Scott win, or do I let Scott win?
No. Pick the best movie, dude. Scott wins either way.
What can I do? I like the love story in Last Samurai better.
Wow, really?
I'm going to go with Last Samurai.
Again, really?
Shocked.
The love story is better.
It is an awesome love story.
It is an awesome love story. Yes. It actually ends with two people falling in love.
Yep.
I mean, what other area of the world can you see, like have a man murder your husband and then you fall in love with that man?
Well, it depends on what your definition of murder is, but I see your point.
Stockholm Syndrome.
No, not really. He was
reverse Stockholm Syndrome. Yeah.
They actually discussed that at one point in the movie, I think, that he was a soldier and they were both soldiers doing their duty. That's not murder. That's what soldiers do.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. I was trying to make a funny.
No, I know.
Thanks for pissing all over.
I'm trying to piss all over your funny.
Thank you. I got to that already. Thank you.
So that means...
That's why I'm here, man.
That means that it's all down to you.
Oh, dude, you know what I'm going to say.
Well, yeah, I kind of assume.
Even if it wasn't my pick, I think, again, for the reasons I gave earlier, Titanic is more a disaster movie centered around one event, whereas Last Samurai is a historical piece.
Okay.
So Last Samurai gets my vote.
So that's it. The Ho Battle Royale is over, and the winner of the best historical period piece movie of all time is The Last Samurai. I did not see that coming.
I didn't either.
Honestly. Did not see that coming.
I'll take it, though.
All right, so you guys want to know how our listeners voted on the Facebook group in determining their favorite period piece movies?
Sure.
We've got a top five. Number five coming in at three votes is Braveheart. I'm actually surprised none of us chose Braveheart.
Honestly, it never occurred to me.
No?
I probably wouldn't have picked it anyway.
No? Fourth was 12 Years a Slave, which was one of ours. And that's the only one in this entire top five that was one of our original eight, which is really interesting. Number three was Master and Commander with four votes.
That one I would have picked, and that one I totally forgot about, too.
Yeah. Number two was Apollo 13 with 11 votes. And, that's one I was kicking myself for not thinking of, because that would have been a better pick than Amadeus, I think.
That's not a period piece to me.
Too modern? The 60s is too modern for you?
Too event-focused. Again, like Titanic, to me, that's a disaster movie.
And the number one period piece with 15 votes from the from the Hollywood Outsider community was... From the Hollywood Outsider community was Saving Private Ryan. Another one that none of us picked.
Yeah, but it won last time.
For best war movie.
It was best war movie.
Maybe that's why we didn't pick it subconsciously.
That's why I didn't pick it.
Like, yeah, we don't want it to win twice kind of thing.
To me, a period piece is different than a war piece.
Okay. There's no overlap. There's no Venn diagram.
Well, maybe it's too new. Like the Civil War works for me as a period piece.
World War II
doesn't.
Dude, that was 70 years ago.
I get it. I don't know.
Am I doing the math right? It's 70? Yeah, 70. Give or take a decade.
So basically what we're saying is our entire movie group is wrong. Because
not at all.
We picked The Last Samurai.
We did pick The Last Samurai. And I think we're gonna have a lot of comments about that tomorrow when this comes out. So
yep.
I'm looking forward to Steve Peterson telling Aaron how wrong he was about the Foo Fighters, personally.
I'll take care of this whole argument right now. Everybody who says that my movie shouldn't have won, you're wrong. There we go. End of argument.
All right, what's this movie? Before we get to that, we want to take a second and extend our thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated at patreon.com/The Hollywood Outsider. We really do appreciate you taking the time and resources to help us keep the lights on here at The Hollywood Outsider. It really does help more than you know, and just thank you. And for our $10 contributors, want to give a very special shout out as well. So that's awesome. All of you that are donating that much, we really appreciate it. So back to what's this movie? Each week we pick a movie suggested by either our host or a listener. The person has the option to either play a clip, offer you what am I, a riddle, limerick, or a haiku, and they can even reenact a famous quote from their movie if they choose. So if you think you know what the movie is, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com or through the contact tab in the app, and we'll give you a proper ho shout out on the next episode. Last week's clip was Zach's pick, and the movie was Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Those that guessed it correctly were Troy Heinrichs, Thomas Becks, Johan Eriksson, Steve Peterson, Kyle Nolan, Philip Thompson, and Manuel Perez. Congratulations to all those. This week, it is John Sanford's chance to confuse us all, one of our listeners, and he actually gave us a little bit of a poem to reenact here. So here's a clue. Mel might be crazy, but that doesn't mean he's wrong. He bites Captain Picard's nose, then ends with a song. I'm going to say that one more time just because I jacked it up in the middle anyway. Mel might be crazy, but that doesn't mean he's wrong. He bites Captain Picard's nose, then ends with a song. Again, if you think you know what that movie is, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. All right, now we're going to do our spoiler-free reviews. We've got quite a few to go through. Our first one actually comes from Aaron, who's not here, but he gave us a pre-recorded message to give us his review of Baby Driver. So, Aaron, take it away.
Hey, guys, it's Aaron. I really apologize for not being able to be here this week. Hopefully, Scott hasn't bored you silly with his hosting nonsense, and you guys are enjoying the show. I'm sure those guys are doing a great job, but unfortunately, I couldn't be there this week. But I do have two movies I want to talk about, okay? Whether you like it or not, I'm gonna. Because one is coming out on June 28th, I believe, which is called Baby Driver. Now, I've touted this movie since I saw it at South by Southwest, but I'm gonna tout it once more because it's finally going nationwide. And it's one of those movies I really want you guys to check out. It's written and directed by Edgar Wright, who I normally do not tout. I'm usually like, yeah, he's okay. I didn't really care for Scott Pilgrim. You know, and I really wasn't excited when he was gonna do Ant-Man. He's just not a director I've ever been excited about. That changed because I went and saw it. And I'm gonna get, it's a real simple plot. You've seen the plot before, which is that Ansel Elgort plays Baby. He's known as Baby. Don't laugh until you see it, kids. And he is the getaway driver. He's basically indebted to Kevin Spacey, so he has to act as a getaway driver on heists. And they have different teams for each heist. And you're gonna get team members ranging from John Bernthal, you know, the Punisher, to John Hamm, to Elsa Gonzalez, who's got a breakout role in this. And you've got several other ones that come across. And obviously, Jamie Foxx is great as a guy who doesn't really trust Baby, but he's in it for the big score. But Baby wants out, like they always do, because he's found love. He's found love in Deborah, who's played by Lily James, who you might remember as Cinderella. And I'll be honest, if I met Cinderella, I'd want out too. I'd want to follow her wherever she went because I find her adorable. And she's completely charming, utterly beautiful, just everything you want in a movie like this. She's just perfect. So what happens is Baby wants out. There's some confusion and some problems, and everybody wants to kill Baby because of his wanting out and what it causes. I'm not going to ruin anything about the movie. But here's what makes it different, okay? Here's what makes Baby Driver unique, is that Edgar Wright shoots every chase scene. You know, and you've seen chase scenes, man, from Bullet to Fast and Furious to everything else in the free world. You have seen French Connection. You've seen chase scenes. Everybody's seen them. What I've never seen is have it done choreographed almost to where it's a musical. I keep telling people this movie is like La La Land if it was directed by F. Gary Gray, who did The Italian Job and the latest Fast and the Furious. That's what it felt like. It feels very choreographed. It feels like almost like a musical. Everything that he does as he's escaping, he times everything to beats, and you find out there's a reason for it in the movie. But he basically selects a track, just a track, and he drives to the beat. So the beat is kind of like the rhythm helps him find his way, and he has to keep it in his head. He has to have it pounding in his head to stay focused. It's part of his focus mechanism. It's a really cool way to do a chase scene. And because of that, everything is timed to it. You know how trailers these days are always doing those great musical timing cues to dun, 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 you know, every action is timed to those beats. That's what every action scene in this movie is done that way. It's really impressive, man. I can't sell it enough. Ansel Elgort is a guy I didn't really care much about. I mean, he's been fine in the stuff I've seen him in. Fault in the Stars, Our Stars, Divergent, all of those. He's been fine, but he hasn't like really knocked my socks off or anything. Here he knocked my socks off. He emerges as a star. He's the real deal. Edgar Wright's the real deal. This is a movie you got to see. I'm going to hype it, because I know we're all sick of sequels. We're sick of reboots. We're sick of mummies. We're sick of everything. We want something fresh. This is taking something you've seen 100 times and making it fresh. It's an original take on an exhaustive premise. So check it out. Baby Driver. Go see it. $10 full price of admission. I give it $8.50. Yeah, $8.50. Wonder Woman money. That's what I gave it. The other movie I saw, not quite as excited about, but I will tell you why. 47 meters deep or 47 meters down, but they're kind of deep. You know what I'm saying? It's a movie that follows two sisters that are vacationing in Mexico. One of them is played by Mandy Moore, just got dumped from her boyfriend because she's not fun. So her other sister says, you know what'll be fun? Let's go shark diving. Let's get in a rusty ass cage on some backwoods boat, and we'll pay him $100. He'll take us out cage diving. We'll go down about 5 meters and we'll be able to swim with sharks. Except this cage is rusty and it's a piece of crap and everybody should have seen it. And the cage, the winch breaks and they plummet to the bottom of the ocean. So these two sisters, who's Mandy Moore and Claire Holt, have to survive and find a way to get to the front, or I'm sorry, to get to the top of the surface. And they have to do so while sharks are all around them. They can't see them. It's pitch dark. It's intense. Here's what I want to say about 47 meters down, okay? I didn't want to see it. Trailer looked cheesy. I was like, well, I saw The Shallows, and Blake Lively looks better in a bikini man anymore. No offense. Then I got talked into it. It's Father's Day. My daughter's like, let's go see a movie. I'm like, I want to see something fun. Tupac was out, but I kind of want something fun. And plus, it was an hour shorter, so this one. So I go, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it. It is a lot of fun. I am telling you, it is intense. I jumped at least 3 times. I don't jump in these movies. I don't jump in any movie. Unless I'm on my way to get more popcorn, I don't jump. So this movie scared me several times. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. I would be recommending and raving about it. Now, Mandy Moore, you're no Blake Lively still in the acting department or the bikini department, but she held her own and she did a great job. So did Claire Holt. The problem is they do fast forward 1 minute. If you're even a little worried about, I'm not going to spoil, but it'd be kind of it's not a detail spoil. It's an idea spoiler. They do something I hate. I hate it. They have basically two endings. One's real. One's not. You know what I'm talking about? It's the epitome of like a dream sequence. There's two endings. It drives me bonkers. It's a personal pet peeve. I can't do it. It ruined the movie for me. The funny part is either one of those endings on their own would have been great. Either one, pick one, would have been great. But because you tried to do the old, haha, we're going to El Toro the audience, you know, we're going to rip the blanket, the red sheet away from us the last minute. Haha, you sucker. That pissed me off. You ruined the experience for me. I would be raving nonstop about this movie if it wasn't for the ending, which they totally blew. And either way they could have went would have been great. They just decided they wanted their cake and they wanted to eat it too. Whatever that means. I mean, you have your cake. Why wouldn't you eat it too? I don't understand what the hell that saying means. Anyway, so that's what I'm going to say. 47 meters down is 3/4 of a great movie, 1/4 of a Alien Covenant. So if $10 full price for admission, I'm giving it $4, and it's all because of the last 15 minutes. When you go see it, I think you'll understand. All the acting's good. The direction is taught. Everything is well done. Except for those last 15 minutes. Just a bad, bad call. All right, guys. I've been talking long enough. I'm sure you're already sick of me. I'm at 7 minutes and 46 seconds. I mean, I don't really know. What more could I talk about? Let's talk about Scott. Now, if you listen to the Patreon episode, did I mention how late Scott was? All right, well, forget that. Let's get back to the regular show. Thank you guys for listening. Remember, 47 meters down, go try it if you're okay with fake endings, but I'm just telling you, you're going to be pissed. And Baby Driver, go see it no matter what. I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of a section that's a little too long, but everything else is fun, fun, fun. Great acting and the choreography, I'm telling you, it's La La Land, Mad Max La La Land. There we go. Enjoy it. All right, back to the show.
All right, next up, I'm going to give my quick review of a Netflix original television show that I watched this past week called Anne with an E. And apparently it's not brand new. I sneaked one in that was over a month old, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. If you're not familiar with Anne with an E, it is actually based on a novel by the name of Anne of Green Gables, which came out back in 1908. So it's a very, very old story. There was actually a 1985 movie based on the book as well called Anne of Green Gables, which you might be more familiar with that name. As I've said so many times in the show in the past, I didn't have a lot of options of movies to watch when I was a kid. This movie was rated G, so it was one that I was actually allowed to watch that wasn't a cartoon Disney movie. So I watched this one a lot. Yes, I know it's kind of a girly movie, but I absolutely loved it as a kid. I actually read the book.
Did you have to watch it in your cupboard under the stairs?
Not quite that bad, but okay. I did watch it. I read the book. I was in fifth or sixth grade when I read this book, and I really, really enjoyed it. So Anne with an E is a retelling of the story with a little bit of a modern spin. And when I say modern spin, I don't mean that they put it in modern times. It still takes place in like late 19th century up in Prince Edward Island, Canada. And it tells the story of a girl named Anne. She's got red hair, freckles. She's super boisterous, intense personality, very dramatic, overly dramatic at times. But she's adopted by Marilla Cuthbert and Matthew Cuthbert, who are brother and sister. And they think they're adopting a boy. And all of a sudden, this red-haired little girl shows up instead, and it becomes this thing of do they keep the girl? Do they send her back to the orphanage? And things happen, and it's just a lovely story, for lack of a better way to say this. It's such a heartwarming, lovely story. I love Anne of Green Gables so much, and this one actually does a really, really solid job. The girl that her name is Amy Beth McNulty. She plays Anne. She plays this part. I was so worried about going into this because Megan Follows did it in the original series and she did it just so great. So over the top, but in a way that was believable. And Anne pushes that over the topness a little bit, almost too much, but not too far for me. And because that's kind of the charm of the series is just how over the top Anne is. And she's just got this huge imagination and over the top and worries about the tiniest little details, which sounds, you're a father of two teenage daughters. So like,
yep.
Imagine that like escalated like times five.
Nope.
Doesn't sound good.
No, thanks.
But again, it takes place in 19th century, so it's not, you're not dealing with modern problems. But
right.
what's most interesting about this series to me is that it took some creative liberties from the original source material to make it slightly darker. And when I say slightly darker, I don't mean going like the way Batman went darker or some of these superhero movies have gone darker and just like really gritty. It's just they touch on some subjects that you wouldn't expect to be taking place in the 19th century. It's a show that I would recommend parents have their young daughters watch because I feel like Anne is very inspirational in terms of her independent woman mindset, which was not a big thing back in the late 19th century. It was just starting to become a thing. I think there's a lot of good life lessons for girls to learn from watching this. And it's just a heartwarming story. You just kind of, as annoying as the character can be at sometimes because she's over the top, you just can't help but root for her, and I highly recommend it. So if you like Anne of Green Gables, like I did, give it a shot. I will be the first to admit that I have a little bit of nostalgia with it because I watched the original so much, but I still think it's worth checking out. So that is Anne with an E on Netflix. John, talk to me about 12 Feet Deep.
All right, 12 Feet Deep. What we have here is a story about two sisters who get themselves stuck in a public pool when the pool manager, he gets really eager to leave for the weekend because it is going to be a long weekend. He essentially, on his way out, shuts the fiberglass covering to this Olympic-sized pool over the girls as they're trying to dive deep for a heirloom that they're going after. And I mean, at first, when you hear this whole thing, you're like, hey, you know what? That's kind of a weird, goofy story. How would that actually happen to anyone? And the crazy thing is that they based the story off of true events. This happened to somebody, and that's where they got the story from. It is a very tight, very well constructed character piece. We have it strongly relies on your stars, which are Nora Jane Noon and Alexander Park. Both of them cheat because neither one of them are American, and yet they pull it off amazingly. Nora Jane Noon is an Irish actress who has like the thickest Irish accent you can imagine, but here she doesn't have it, and it's a kind of fun playing, you know, or watching when she slips or not. Alexandra, I'm completely floored by. She's a Australian, and she's a better American than we are in some cases. They're supported by Tobin Bell and by Diane Farr. That they do also hold up the story.
Wait a minute, Tobin Bell kind of, from Saw?
Yeah, Tobin Bell from Saw. It's, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but what this movie really does do is a handy bit of misleading with casting. You think you're going to go into one kind of story, and you're sort of waiting for that story to happen, but you get a different kind of story entirely. It's much more psychological, much more about what people have gone through. And they did such a wonderful job as far as framing the shots, giving you enough information. So it's not just visually, it's not just told by what you hear them say to each other or what they go through. There's a lot of visual elements to work with and things to, and storytelling elements made as far as decision making by just how they shot and what they put in the shot. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot more than I expected, and I really enjoyed it. I think if $10 is the full price of admission, I give it $6. I think later on in the week or next week, Aaron and I are going to actually have a interview with the director, and I'm really looking forward to talking to him about this.
Very cool. That sounds really interesting. So
I don't think I can see this, actually. I think I'm going to have PTSD flashbacks just from hearing your description of it. Part of my training for the Border Patrol was what they call drown proofing, where they basically put us in full uniform, handcuffed us, and tossed us into the deep end of a pool and said whoever was alive in an hour would pass the class.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Man,
that can't be like 100% for real, can
it? No, I'm sure they were watching from a room, but they did walk out like they were leaving. And there is a way that you can do that by floating face down, then picking your head up every 30 seconds to take a breath. But man, it is literally the most uncomfortable feeling to be helpless in a pool that you can't stand in. So yeah, I don't think I'm going to watch this one.
There's a lot of tight shots where I can see you kind of freaking out after hearing that story. There are a lot of tight shots where you, yeah, it's close.
Very claustrophobic.
Very claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Hey, Scott, what's going to happen in the VOD?
All right. The first movie we got is a Netflix series that comes out on June 28th called, how do you pronounce this? Is it Okja? OKJA. Okja. This one had a lot of controversy around it because if you remember, this is the one that was booed at Cannes Film Festival strictly because it was airing on Netflix. And apparently the people that attend that festival were upset that an independent film, it shouldn't be considered independent if it was airing on Netflix. But,
wow.
It's about a girl named Miha, a young girl who risks everything to prevent a powerful multinational company from kidnapping her best friend, a massive animal named Okja. This one stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Tilda Swinton, and Lily Collins. I think I might watch that just for Lily Collins alone. What do you guys think?
Absolutely. No, as much as that's pretty funny, but the whole movie looks great. And I've seen what the creature of Okja looks like. And it's kind of cute and weird. So why not?
All right. The next one is 2:22, as in the time, 2 hours, 22 minutes. This one comes out on June 30th. A man's life is derailed when an ominous pattern of events repeats itself in exactly the same manner every day, ending at precisely 2:22 p.m. That sounds a lot like Groundhog Day, kind of.
Yeah.
So I actually like that concept, so I might actually check that out.
Who's in it?
Nobody that I know.
Okay.
I didn't bother to write down the actors' names because there was nobody recognizable. Maybe it's a little bit more independent, or maybe I just don't know my actors very well. So
maybe.
All right, John. Let's kick it off with let's see where this goes.
Yeah. So this is going to be our game of the week, and we're going to do one we've done before. It's let's see where this goes. A host is going to toss out a subject, title, name, or phrase. No one knows about this at all. From there, we're going to see what kind of discussion we have from it. So this week, Scotch is going to throw out the topic. Go ahead, Scotch.
Okay. In honor of a somewhat known movie that came out this week or recently, I probably a couple of you have heard about the movie that I'm going to reference with the actor I'm about to throw out. Let's talk about Brendan Fraser.
Oh, yes.
What the hell happened to this dude? Scotty, go ahead.
I feel like we actually talked about Brendan Fraser for one of these, didn't we?
Yeah, well, we basically did. We have talked about what happened to him. And, yeah.
I must have missed that one. Damn it. Now I feel stupid.
No, that's okay. We can talk about Brendan. I don't have a problem talking about Brendan Fraser.
I thought it was a good tie-in because of The Mummy. Because everybody who I've talked to who has seen The Mummy, literally the first words out of their mouth were, I miss Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
So...
Well, that was even a point from that article that we talked about earlier from Forbes where people were like, why would I go see The Mummy? I can just go back home and watch Brendan Fraser's version of it. I know exactly. I like that one.
That was kind of where I got the idea for this.
Oh, man. I do miss Brendan Fraser. I mean, there were some stinkers he had, like George of the Jungle.
Oh, no, whoa, dude, whoa. George of the Jungle was
awesome.
You
watch your mouth.
You really like that movie?
That yes. scene where he does the warp speed swing, I don't think I've ever laughed that hard in my life at a movie. Ask Vicky about it next time you see her. I laughed myself off the couch the first time I saw that.
Really?
I was laughing so hard I couldn't breathe.
Okay.
That is one of my favorite Brendan
Fraser. So maybe movies. I'm an error there. Can you think of a bad Brendan Fraser movie?
Monkey Bone.
Sure.
Monkey Bone?
Yeah.
Mm. Monkey Bone. And I still like it, but it's Monkey Bone. And I like it because it was like, all about he's an artist and all that. And I'm an artist and I felt some sort of kinship with him. And he was in a bad movie. And I feel like my life's a bad movie sometimes.
Was that Chris Kattan in that as well?
I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I can picture the cover of the DVD case right now, but I don't think I've ever seen it. It had like animation mixed in with real life, right? It was one of those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Never saw it though, but man, like you mentioned the Mummy movies already. I love Blast from the Past.
Blast just the past rewatched is awesome. A few weeks ago.
Oh, that was
Encino Man.
I've never seen Encino Man.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's where he's like a guy that's frozen in
it's
ice.
Him and Pauly Shore. He basically plays a.
That's why I didn't see it.
That gets thawed out. It's absolutely hysterical.
Bedazzled is one of my favorite go-to comedies. Just like when I need a good laugh, that movie cracks me up so much. And the fact that he's able to cheesily give different performances of different characters.
Like, right.
Oh man, that movie's so funny.
Does G.I. Joe count as a Brendan Fraser movie? Because he was in it uncredited for like 15 seconds.
He was?
How was he in it uncredited?
He's Sergeant Stone. The guy who.
Oh, right. He is.
Yeah. The guy who rolls up on that tri-wheeler while those two are in training. And he literally has like three lines. That was Brendan Fraser.
I don't remember that. Like the first one.
Yeah. The first one. Yeah.
They refer to him as Sergeant Stone in the movie, but I don't think Sergeant Stone is listed in the credits. I don't think he got any credit for that, but he's in it for like 30 seconds.
So where's he been? Because I know somebody posted an article on our group earlier that he was making a comeback with like a small movie or something, wasn't he?
He's getting a TV show on FX or something.
I think he's got a TV show coming out.
Yeah, he's a starring role in a TV show that he's coming out, which means that he's going to probably be in a better position than he was before. But he was also in The Affair. He was a prison guard in The Affair, which he played very against type. He was very smarmy, very dirty, very gross of a character. And the bits and pieces of it I've seen, it's very believable. And the poor guy doesn't get as much credit as he deserves. But from what I understand, what happened to him is that he did Journey to the Center of the Earth, and he didn't want to do the sequel. And he also hurt his back at some point, too. And it all turned into this whole, like, amalgamation of what kind of, like, mistakes can be made in a short period of time to really tank your career for a little bit and make you unviewable. And that's kind of what happened to him, because then he started making some bad movie choices. I think one of them there was a Bugs Bunny, a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Looney Tunes. Yeah. With Jenna Elfman.
Yep.
Yeah. There was there was one with, like, animals and real estate, and he was a dad on who's fighting against all these animals, and he was also a real estate developer kind of thing.
I don't remember
it was just a really bad choice.
I think I read the same article you did, because they basically credited his not following up Journey to the Center of the Earth as what basically destroyed his career.
Yeah,
because The Rock took it and got, like, everybody loved it, so.
They kind of forgot about Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, they forgot that Brendan Fraser was in the first one. Mm. And they think that if he had done the second one, his career wouldn't have gone off the rails the way it did.
Well, here's to him making a comeback. I might check out that show on FX just to see him in something.
Hope so. Definitely, because I love him. I think he's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he's an amazing actor. It's just, well, maybe not amazing, but I think he is a great character actor, and he can pull off a lot of different things. If he puts himself back in shape, he can be a good action guy. If he just let, you know, if with the whole fact that he let himself go a little bit, he still can be like a guy that, like the prison guard role, he's kind of soft in the middle and he just looks kind of dirty. He can do that, and it still works. You don't really want to meet him in the dark alley or anything, but
well, that's still what I want to see, because I feel like everything else I've seen him do is kind of tongue-in-cheek. I mean, The Mummy was like a semi-serious movie, but he was still more not comedic. Really. You know, no, but I mean yeah. Like, yeah. There was a lot of humor in that movie.
Yeah, that's
what I mean.
It was
very pulpy.
Yeah, it was very Saturday matinee.
Yeah.
That's why I loved it. He was that movie. The first two Mummy movies are two of my favorite movies ever. They're popcorn movies, or they're Poppy Field movies for me. I will watch them whenever they're on. Whatever point they're on, if I'm flipping through channels and I see The Mummy at any point, I'll stop and watch it. And that's solely because of the performance by Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
Well, that because Rachel Weisz is hot.
Oh, School Ties is an old one.
School Ties is an old one. And look at he was in School Ties with Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, and somebody else I can't think of right now.
Yep. I miss you, Brendan. Please come back and make more movies.
Yes, please do. Something fun. I want to bring
better
fun
movies.
I know that, John, you said you really appreciated his performance in the movie where he was playing this creepy character, but I want fun Brendan Fraser back again.
Yep.
I want to see him get a nice pulpy TV show. It would be kind of fun. Like if they decided to remake, what was it, Island of the Monkey Skull, or what is it?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Dude, I got nothing.
Carl Garlow should know this one. It's the Stephen Collins starred in the original one.
Island of Dr. Moreau or something?
No, it's a TV show. It's like the island. I can't remember the name. It was like Island of the Golden Skull or the Golden Monkey or something like that. It's a guy who's flying a seaplane and he's got a dog with one eye. Anyhow, it's
that sounds made up.
I know, but with Brendan Fraser, I'm sold, because that sounds like it would be awesome.
Yeah, it was an adventure show, and like they had these weird, twisted, like scary monkeys on the island. It was pretty cool.
All right,
that's all I got.
That works.
Well, we're about to wrap up. Before we do get to our emails, though, any recent film or TV recommendations that we haven't previously discussed in the past, guys?
Did you guys talk about The Wall in the past? I'm way behind on listening to the show because I don't have my hour and a half commute anymore. Did you talk about The Wall with...
We haven't.
Pink Floyd?
No, not that wall. The Great Wall of China.
Oh, the one with Matt Damon?
Matt Damon, thank you. I could not think of his name. I kept coming up with Leonardo DiCaprio, and I knew that
was... I haven't seen it. I've heard it's good, though.
Vicky and I just watched it last weekend. It's... The review that I gave it on Facebook when I said that we were watching it was better than meh. I gave it a 650. It's entertaining. It didn't deserve the bad press that it got.
Well, it got a lot of bad press because of the fact that it was Matt Damon and not...
The quote-unquote whitewashing.
It got the whitewashing bad press, which is bullshit, because if you watch the movie, the white people don't come off very good in this movie. I mean, people need to watch a movie before they start making that claim.
Okay.
The white people are not very well regarded in this movie. They're not portrayed very well, and he certainly did not swoop in and save the Chinese. That is not the movie. It's entertaining. They try to root it. They try to give you a reason for why these dragons are there. If you've seen the trailer, I'm not giving anything away. The Great Wall was built to keep out these lizard things from invading China. And they actually come up with a somewhat plausible explanation for why they're there. It's not just that there are dragons and you have to accept it like you do in Game of Thrones. There's actually, they came from somewhere.
Okay.
And it actually makes sense in the story. And to me, it made the story more enjoyable that these things had an origin and not that just they were there forever. I really enjoyed it. If you're looking for just, you know, to turn your brain off for a couple hours and enjoy an action movie, check it out. It's China made a credible effort at doing a big blockbuster film.
Okay.
They're not quite there yet. They've got a little bit of work to do before they can really enter that stage, but they made a really good try at it.
All right. John, any from you?
I recently caught Victor Frankenstein. That's the one with Harry Potter's in it.
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe, and I can't remember the other guy.
Which Professor sure people, X.
Yeah, I Professor can't X. wait to hear what you say about this, because I started watching it and turned it off. So continue.
Well, you know, the thing is that I got into it and I thought actually it's not really a bad movie by any means, and it's not great. It is, I guess you can say it's better than meh. I did enjoy the story, and I liked the fact that we're seeing it primarily from the point of view of Igor and what Igor's kind of backstory was. So I liked that part of it, and really it gave us the coolest looking Frankenstein's monster I've seen ever. You have to wait till the very end to see it, but it's one of the coolest ones I have ever seen as far as design features go.
All right, stand by. What character does Daniel Radcliffe play?
He plays Igor.
Oh, crap. I need to watch this movie again. I started and I got as far as the circus, which is right. Like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I thought that Daniel Radcliffe, and maybe I should have read up on it first, was playing Frankenstein's monster. And I watched this and I'm like, this sucks. I wanted to see a monster movie, so I turned it off.
Yeah, no, what they do is basically they tell the story of why Igor was so instrumental to Victor Frankenstein. And essentially, Igor is a guy in a circus who actually has no name while he's in the circus. It's Frankenstein gives him the name, but he basically teaches himself anatomy and all this stuff while working the circus because he just loves the human figure so much. And he figures out how to heal people at the circus. He becomes basically the circus doctor, and then hilarity ensues.
Hmm. Okay, definitely got to give it another try.
Yeah,
Lesson learned. I did not give that enough time to get going.
And that's only the first like maybe 15 minutes of the movie, so I'm not giving anything away by that. But it's pretty great. I like a lot of the performances in it, and you get to see the spiraling out of control of Victor Frankenstein. They have a nice little throwback joke to Young Frankenstein.
Oh, cool!
Yeah,
that's awesome. Really
very quick, and I only caught it because I was. Because I was like, what just happened? And yeah, they did a nice little throwback joke to that. Okay, so
now I have to go see this movie.
Yeah, I'm definitely watching it again.
I've got one quick one as well, and I got to give a shout out to Steve Peterson, who has been harping on me to see this movie for months and months, and if not years. And he was actually in town this past week to visit Chicago, or not this past week, but a couple weeks ago, brought me a copy of Rudderless. Have you heard of this movie, Rudderless?
Yep.
Have you seen it?
Nope.
You need to watch this movie. Oh my goodness. Steve and I have a like interest in music, especially music and movies. And I am ashamed to say that I hadn't seen this movie until I was basically forced to watch it by Steve. This movie is fantastic. It's actually William H. Macy's directorial debut. It's the first movie he actually wrote and directed.
Really?
And he's got a small part in it as well, but Billy Crudup has this band, and the reason that he's got together is interesting. I don't want to tell you because I don't want to spoil it, because I really want you to go into this movie not knowing as much as I went in knowing absolutely nothing, and I want you to do the same thing. Because number one, the path that they take from the very get-go of this movie is fascinating. There's a moment in the movie that things just go a completely different direction that you're not expecting, and it was very well written, and the music is fantastic. It's just really great music. The final song of the movie is one of those that's like a mic drop moment that just makes you just want to cry. It's a very well-told story that, and Anton Yelchin is in it.
Oh, really?
He's in the band with Billy Crudup, and seriously can't recommend it enough. So thank you, Steve, for making me finally actually watch this movie. He had to physically buy me a copy of the movie to get me to watch it. So I know it's a little bit older, but definitely worth checking out if you have not seen it. And they call it Rudderless because he lives on a houseboat.
Got it.
So yeah, that's why the name of the band is called Rudderless. Highly recommend it.
The only thing I know about that movie is that every time an ad for it shows up on Facebook and it shows the movie poster, it cuts off the R.
So it was like Utterless?
Which turns it into an entirely different movie. The first time I saw it, because I think you posted a link to it, or maybe he did, on the Hope page.
It says Utterless?
And I'm scrolling through, and all I see is a big headline in the movie poster that says Utterless. And I'm like, what the hell? So I scroll back up and look, and I actually IMBD'd Utterless, and it came up with Rudderless. I'm like, oh, all right, the picture's going to cut off.
It's all about cow surgeries.
Yeah, it was like, what are we watching a movie about deformed cows for?
That's hilarious.
So, yeah.
All right, any recent outrage in entertainment news or events that happened in the past week?
Reality TV apparently had some big thing happen with an assault on one of their shows.
Yeah.
The Bachelor.
I think we actually talked about, well, I wasn't there. I was because I was late for an episode, but we talked about that on one of our Patreon episodes.
Yeah, well, I'm not privileged enough because I haven't donated my money. So. I'll bring it up again. Reality TV needs to die. Reality TV is the end of civilization as we know it.
For more than one reason.
I really wish it would just go away. Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect example of why.
Yeah.
John, thoughts on reality TV? Are you a fan?
I dislike reality TV when it's not a competition. And if it is a competition, it needs to be like honest people doing honest things as opposed to some sort of stupid setup where people are being jerks to one another.
Yep. Or where the producers are setting up things for them that don't make sense, or they're orchestrating it. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. There's some that I like baking shows. I like some of those, but they have to be, it has to be the English one where people don't actually yell at each other.
British Bake Off.
Yeah. Great British Bake Off. I love that because it's so calming and sweet and nice. And you can almost take a nap to it. And I also like Face Off, which again, if you can actually see people like run to help each other, or they're trying to make sure that the other person's, makeup job is done and trying to make sure everyone can get through to the final look section. So it's nice to see stuff like that versus, oh, I'm going to torture this person until they quit.
Right. There's a difference to me between contest shows and reality TV. American Idol and shows like that, Amazing Race, to me, that's not reality TV. That's contest TV. There's a difference.
It's a game show.
Yeah, it's almost like a game show. It's a mm-hmm. contest based on your ability, and it's not rigged in any way. It's, hey, let's see you perform, or, you know, let's see how well you can negotiate this race. I don't have a problem with the Amazing Race, even though they do torture those people with some of the events a little bit, but it's all based on their skill at getting through the course. It's not people trying to get their 15 minutes of fame by being as nasty as they possibly can be. Shows like The Bachelor and I don't know if some of the others that they do, Big Brother, shows like that. To me, that is just the death of human civilization.
I go to watch TV shows to escape that kind of drama. Right. And I mean, there's a difference between drama like in a series where you know it's not actually happening. It's a different mindset. I don't care about other people's real life problems. I want to have a story told to me. I don't want to have one orchestrated. I don't want to have one where, like you said, it's just people being as nasty to each other as possible, because that's just people being jerked for the sake of being jerks.
I don't find that entertaining. I find it.
I don't either, but a lot of people do, man. A lot of people do. Otherwise, they would have been gone a long time ago.
There's only one reality show that I watch, and I only know it's a reality show because it wins the Emmy for best reality show almost every year. And that's the Deadliest Catch.
Oh, okay.
The king crab fishing in Alaska. To me, that's fascinating because these guys are just out there trying to do their job. And mm-hmm. half the time they're telling the camera crews to get the hell away from them.
Well, I'm still curious how that thing keeps going, or is it on anymore?
Yeah.
Like, how do you keep that story? Is there enough stuff going on?
It's just them going out fishing every year and the absolute ridiculously dangerous crap that they have to put up with just to make a living.
Oh, okay.
Crab fishing is a dangerous job in the world, statistically. More people die per capita doing that than any other job on the planet.
Interesting.
And that's why the show got formed. And eventually, it's already killed one person on the show. One of the captains died of a stroke while the show was being filmed. Eventually one of those boats is going to sink. And that's not why I'm watching it. I'm watching it hoping that that doesn't happen, because what those guys go through just to put food on the table for their families is absolutely insane. I would do that job for one day and then just curl up in my bunk and cry like a little girl. It's ridiculously dangerous. And to me, I find that compelling TV, but going on TV and trying to win your husband on the Bachelor or whatever, F those shows. I hate those shows.
John, I don't have anything that really pissed me off this week. Do you got anything?
I don't have anything, but what I would like to do is give a shout out to another podcast that we made some friends with recently, which is the Hollywood Zoo Crew. Those guys did us a solid recently, and we'd like to do the same thing for them. Stop by their channel, check them out, see what they're like, and let them know that we sent you over there if you do like what you hear.
Very cool. Let's go on and move on to emails. I got a quick one that comes from Stacy Weaver. Stacy says, "Hey guys, just wanted to say thanks for the show and doing it every week. And thanks to those that support you on Patreon. I definitely will once things turn around financially. I've been listening for quite a while and always wondered, doing all these podcasts have to wear on you at times. So what's the hardest part of doing the show?" John, what do you think? It's just you, because you're not really, Scott, you're not really doing this podcast week to week, are you?
Nope.
You wish.
Thank you for rubbing that in my face. Yeah, it's okay.
Jen, what's the hardest part of this of this for you?
The hardest part for me on this show is trying to remind myself of how I feel about things and figuring out how I want to express those feelings. Because I'll be honest, there's a lot of times when we talk about things that I haven't thought about in months, years, or even decades. And it's just, I have to go and remember how I felt about it. So, and be able to express those feelings, because part of who I am now is somebody who doesn't want to be hyperbolic. I don't want to tell you something is the greatest thing ever. And if I do, it's always one of, or as close to, or something like that. And I don't want to be that kind of person. So that, I think, is the hardest part.
Okay. For me, the hardest part is the prep, and like the anxiety before doing an episode. Believe it or not, doing this for 6 years, I still get anxious getting in front of a microphone. Oh, yeah. And that's not to say that I do a lot of work, because compared to what Aaron puts into the show, I do next to nothing. But I still sit down with the format for a good 2 hours, if not more, each time, and just put things together, because I do better with the script. I'm not as quick-witted as John and Aaron are, unfortunately. So I have to run burgundy this stuff every once in a while. But yeah, the prep work, and like I said, it's crazy how anxious I still get getting in front of this, doing this for as long as we have, and I still get nervous. So
I can actually add to that. Based on my experience today, I got hit last minute with taking over Aaron's slot on the show. I was initially just going to be on to do the Battle Royale and kind of hang out and chat for a little bit. And then Aaron asked me to fill in for him tonight with his movie picks and all that stuff. Research. I mean, I had to take some time out and actually put some work into the show notes that Aaron had put out to us. I don't do it nearly as often as these guys do, but there is a lot of work that goes into making these shows. So hats off to you guys. It's not as easy as it sounds.
All right, John, your email is up.
All right. Sherry has written us, and she says, love the podcast. And last week's episode was hilarious. Zach and Amanda can come back anytime. Note to self, set time bomb for... Okay. Yeah. Also, the 1987 episode was really funny and just a cool idea. So yeah. What's next? Yeah. So what's next? A musical hoe? Oh, don't even tempt.
Oh, Scotty. My God. That Scotty would be amazing. Would
Why did you say that?
An episode done in the style of Film Spotting. What?
What's Film Spotting?
Film Spotting is another podcast. And yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll have to check that out. I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah. Thanks again for all the laughs and insight, Sherry.
All right. You're going to, Scott, you want to fill in for Aaron's emails?
Yeah, I'm going to stand in for Aaron one last time here. And Stefan, I feel terrible. I'm about to murder your last name. We've got one from Stefan Smidbach. If I mispronounce that, you can yell at me online. Says, by the way, one of the oddest father-child relationships would have to be from the movie Lyon, which I do believe he met the professional.
Is it named differently in France? The European version was called Lyon.
So it's named differently in France. He becomes an odd role model for a young girl that didn't have a good start in life. And in many ways, the father figure himself is stuck in something that he, as a kid, never had much of a chance to choose. At least that's how I read it. Either way, it's a classic must-see movie, a movie I sometimes believe most people have seen already. I have. Loved it. Great acting by Jean Reno. I'm sorry, that's one word or one name. Jean Reno, Gary Oldman, and a young Natalie Portman.
I love that movie.
Totally agree. That movie is absolutely amazing.
Gary Oldman is bananas in that movie.
Yes, he is.
Everyone.
I love Jean Reno's performance in that. It sold me on him as an actor, and mm-hmm. then I just loved him even more when he was in Godzilla, which everybody hates, but I loved his character in that movie so much.
I did too, actually.
Well, that's not his fault. That's actually more to do with that Godzilla movie. It's terrible.
He was the best part of that movie, though. Every time he was on the screen, was hilarious. I loved him in that movie as the French insurance guy.
Yeah.
He was awesome.
He really was. And for those who need some clarification, we're not talking about the awesome Godzilla that happened just a few years ago. We're talking about the 1990 something or other.
98. Was it
97? I think it was
97. I try to forget it ever happened.
Yeah. Well, he's a bright spot in that movie. He was awesome.
He was.
Last email, Tori Melching says, love this episode. While it was odd not to have either Scott or Arjun, it still really worked. Amanda and Zach, or comic book Zach, as I call him, did a great job and could very well take over the show in several years.
Uh-oh.
John, you still polishing up those pipe bombs?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, just check it.
Let me just...
While I like to give Scott Clark a great deal of shit, don't we all?
Yeah.
I do like the guy, and I miss him.
Aw.
You've got a fan. Same for Arjun, who I don't pick on as much, but still really like.
Yeah, and Tori actually joined my podcast group, too, so she's back in my good graces.
Oh, cool.
I didn't know she played games, too, so she's got an awesome Mario t-shirt she got for her birthday. So happy birthday, by the way, Tori.
Happy birthday, Tori.
Happy birthday.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Before we go, make sure you join our Facebook group, and also our Twitter is @BuyPopcorn. I don't think we're going to have outtakes at the end of the show, but Aaron usually does those, and he's not here. So, although we got plenty of outtake material. I was going to say,
there could be a lot of them.
There could be a lot.
So. Since you brought up Aaron, I do want to add one thing,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like I have to, since I'm standing in for Aaron.
Okay.
If he had been on the show tonight, we would have had a tie.
We would have had a tie on...
The Battle Royale.
The final one?
Yes.
Ah.
He would not have picked Last Samurai.
Really?
Because it was not his choice for the initial selection of that movie. And I know that because he sent me a text that says, Last Samurai can't star a studly white guy.
Ah.
So had Aaron been here, we would have been calling a guest judge. So
it would have been Titanic versus Last Samurai?
Yep. Somebody would have had to call in and break the tie.
All right. Well, if you like this episode, be sure to check out our other ones, which you can find at thehollywoodoutsider.com, along with several other written reviews that we've done over there. And again, our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Remember also to grab the Ho on the Go with our Apple or Android apps, Spotify, and you can also subscribe to our reviews in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. Scotch, thanks so much for being here, man.
No problem, man. I love doing this show. Hit me on whenever you want.
Awesome. John, thanks for being here, man.
I got nothing better to do.
Got nothing better to do?
I got no place else to be.
All right, and remember the next time you head to the theater, buy popcorn.